The change is all around, and people everywhere have seen the light in what they've found. It's a happy place in the human race, when all our lives are lived for giving. When love is what you find, despair and loneliness, you've got to leave them far behind. Tell the clouds to go, let the feeling show. It's great when your life is full of living.
To me, I can see a normal girl.
got to stay till all the world is living, till all the world is giving, till all the world is loving every day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 6, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on Weekly Call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which you can go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please donate and support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab. You can find it on the right-hand side of our website. Okay, I guess we'll move us over into Q&A. If anybody wants to get into the Q&A early, they're welcome to do so. Star 6 to get into the queue if you have any questions, comments, or statements. Okay, we're going to pick up on our reading, the Bible reading. We're in the Gospel of Mark. We're coming to the end of it. I think we're at the crucifixion, which is the perfect timing because we just passed through Palm Sunday here. And we should be finishing off reading the book of Mark next week, next Monday. So the crucifixion is what we're going to be reading about tonight, and next week it'll be the resurrection. So I guess with our study, it kind of worked out just right on that. But let's get going on that. Hang on a second. This is the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15. And straightway in the morning the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, Art thou king of the Jews? And he answered and said unto him, Thou sayest it. And the chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. And Pilate again asked him again, saying, Answerest thou nothing? Behold, how many things they witness against thee. But Jesus yet answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. Now at the feast he released unto them one prisoner, whosoever they desired. And there was one named Barabbas, which lay bound with them, that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the multitude, crying aloud, began to desire him to do as he had done even unto them. But Pilate answered them, saying, Wilt ye that I release unto you the king of the Jews? For he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. But the chief priest moved the people that he should rather release Barabbas unto them. And Pilate answered and said again unto them, What will ye then that I shall do unto him whom ye call King of the Jews? And they cried out again, Crucify him. Then Pilate said unto them, Why, what evil hath he done? And they cried out the more exceedingly, Crucify him. And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them, and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium. And they called together the whole band. And they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put it upon his head. And began to salute him, Hail, King of the Jews. And they smote him on the head with a reed and did spit upon him and bowing their knees worshipped him. And they that mocked him, they took off the purple from him, and put his own clothes on him, and led him out to crucify him. And they compelled one Simon the Cyrenian, who passed by, cometh out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. And they bring him into the place Golgotha. And they bring him into the place Golgotha, which is being interpreted place of the skull. And they gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh, but he received it not. And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them, what every man should take. And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. And the superscription of his accusation was written over the King of the Jews. And with him they crucified two thieves, the one on his right hand and the other on his left. And the scriptures was fulfilled, which saith, and he was numbered with the transgressors. And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their heads and saying, Ah, thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself and come down from the cross. Likewise also chief priests mocking, saying among them with the scribes, He saved others, himself he cannot save. Let Christ, the King of Israel, descend now from the cross, that we may see and believe. And they that were crucified with him reviled him. And when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And some of them that stood by when they heard it said, Behold, he calleth for Elias. And one ran and filled a sponge full of vinegar, and put it on a reed, and gave him to drink, saying, Let alone, let us see whether Elias will come to take him down. And Jesus cried with a loud voice, and gave up the ghost. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain, from the top to the bottom. And when the centurions which stood over against him saw that he had cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, Truly this man was the Son of God. There were also women looking on afar off, among whom was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James the Lesser, and of Josie, and Salome, who also, when he was in Galilee, followed him and ministered unto him, and many other women which came up with him unto Jerusalem. And now, when the evening was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate, craving the body of Jesus. And Pilate marveled if it he were already dead. And calling unto him the centurion, he asked him whether he had been any while dead. And when he knew it of the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph. And he brought fine linen, and took him down, and wrapped him in the linen, and laid him in a sepulchre, which was hewn out of rock, and rolled a stone unto the door of the sepulchre. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joses, beheld where he laid. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15.
Okay, tonight I had planned on reading through the paper that we filed, but there's so many things going on, I just haven't been able to really prepare that. So we'll probably do it next week. This is the most important paper that we've written to date. I just want to read the first paragraph of this paper. I might have done this last week or the week before. Once I get this, we did mail it out. We did put it today. It went out today's mail. And we also filed the papers for the, what was that, the IRS papers. I think we had 12, 13, 14, 15. I think we had 15 affidavits altogether. You know, Jim had given me 12, I think, and I had 3. Anybody else that still wants to join that, those papers will be filed up on our website nationallibertyalliance.org, and you will find them under, let me see if I can open the page up and see the tab, under the grand jury and action against the judiciary. You'll find the papers, they should be up on the top once I file them. I'll probably put them up there tomorrow. And they'll say, you know, right now the first one that you read is the written mandamus to the clerks, and then filed August 17, 2019, which is the first paper we filed concerning decisions and orders. All the way down through our last papers were filed on February 19th. Although we have been filing many cases that have joined together with our case, I think we've got about 60 cases, 60 joined or somewhere around there, and of course we have the other people coming in with the IRS, and we've had quite a few habeas corpuses, and we've also filed up, and you'll see in this paper once we post it, you're going to see that we, let me see, I think it was, oh goodness, I don't remember, I think it was 30 some odd federal judges and about 40 state judges that we've already done an indictment on. And of course we also did the indictment back couple of years ago with your boy Finnegan, his murder, and there were quite a few people indicted on that one too. In fact, I think it was something like 24 or 34 people that we had indicted on that particular paper. But in any event, all those papers will be posted up there probably tomorrow, and we will read through. It's a short paper. It's not a long paper. It is 14 pages, but there's a lot of pages that really list out all of the evidence and all of the papers, and the list goes on for pages and pages and pages, which is the evidence of proving the fact of our point that we're being made here. But let me just read the first page. It says, comes now the above entitled Court of Record to review the record. This is our closing statement, after which the court is adjourned until after the draining of the swamp and the enemies of liberty are brought to justice, at which time we will make an assessment, remove the olive branch, and summarily determine the facts and reiterate the matter as law and justice require. Meanwhile, we will be continuing the filing of joinders, habeas corpuses, and indictments of federal and state judges that ignore due process. So this, is, again, is our final paper until after the draining of the swamp. Today, you know, listening to the news over the weekend, coming up to the weekend, what's going on with the virus, New York City, out in Los Angeles, I mean, all these different things all over the place, and none of the news seems to make sense. So we know other things are happening. I'm hearing quite a few reports of military movements, but the only ones that I know that for sure did happen were the ones that the president spoke about in the Southern Hemisphere, where he's out dealing with people who put cartels and different groups or organizations concerning drug movements into the United States. But it's a lot more than that. We know it has to do also with human trafficking. We know that a lot of things have been going on over the past months. A lot of people being picked up and arrested on the human trafficking level, not only here in the United States, but ultimately around the world. And we know that the military has been active with that. Donald Trump did put forward an executive order declaring an emergency. We do know that there is a lot more going on in this virus. Very confusing, this virus, and how things are going. And, of course, the narrative is played up by the lamestream media. But also, there is a concern that something is going on. I do believe a bioweapon has been dropped, and there is a big concern with that. I was listening to the president today, just a couple hours ago, and he had mentioned, goodness, I'm pretty sure he said about 10 different, possible medications or things that the FDA was looking at and pushing forward as quick as possible to release to treat a lot of these things. But nevertheless, with that being said, strange things are going on. Things do not seem or appear to be what they say is. I've seen quite a few pictures coming out of New York City. I've seen pictures out of Bellevue, one of the major hospitals down in New York City. and numerous other hospitals, one in Brooklyn and a few other places, and there's absolutely nothing going on. The streets are empty. The hospitals don't seem to be mobbed. They don't seem to be, you know, it's just very strange. So I don't know if we know that we're really going on. Any of us knows what's really going on. There's a lot of, information out there that we can't rely on. And I don't want to repeat some of the things I heard on that side of the story because we'll just have to wait. I know that we were told to watch the news, and I'm pretty sure that focus was for today, focusing on the 6th, April 6th, but it could be a little later. So I think soon we're going to find out what's going on. So we are in that process. That's why this paper, you know, the paper that we've been filing, really, we've been kind of just hitting the mark. You know, we rush to get papers done, and we fall behind schedule, and then we finally file them. And it appears that we seem to be filing them just in time or just on time. So things seem to be falling together. The paper that we've been struggling to file, which I tried to file last week, but it didn't actually get out until this morning, so it went out today. And of course, that's the paper I just started reading, the first paragraph one. In any event, we're going to read that paper next week. But this paper, again, as you could see in the beginning, just reading the first paragraph, is that this is our final statement until it's time for action. And action will take place when the swamp is finally drained. I believe the storm is upon us, and when we get to the other side of the storm, it looks like they're going to be doing mass arrests all at one time. That's what appears to be the focus. And I understand things go pretty deep, and there's a lot of underground things going on. So, but again, we're going to have to wait to see what comes of it and what kind of reporting we actually do get and what is really, really going on with these ships, one in Los Angeles and the other one in New York, and all of these temporary mass type medical units being set up. They got a big one out in Manhattan, down in Central Park, and in various places, quite a few. If I recall, I think it was something like 23 of them around the United States. And of course, military alert everywhere. So anyway, it's going to be very interesting to find out what's been going on, and hopefully after a few days, we'll see and understand. But when we come to the end of this, when we come to the conclusion, it'll become the time of shock, really, at that point, because a lot of people won't believe what's really been going on and how much intelligence that the American people should have had that's been, suppressed. A lot of technological things, even energy. And I'm sure even some, space travel or what, I don't think we're actually out there far in space, but I do think we've been had a lot more going on in space than we've been told. Once we get past this time and a lot of people have been arrested, there's going to be a lot of really shocked people but it's also going to be a time of power grab. When the deep state is removed, there's going to be a power void, a power vacuum, or a vacuum, and we the people have to fill this vacuum. If we don't fill it, then who will fill it? If we the people don't fill it, the only option left is the people in government will fill it, and we're back to the same game again. It's only a matter of time. So we must fill these positions, and we must get educated in order to fill these positions. And that education needs to start now. I think we're very, very close to this power vacuum that we're going to have to fill. So, again, this paper is an extremely important paper. After this paper, again, when we do start filing again, it's going to be really a lot of indictments. And we're going to have to come together and really consider. We're going to watch to see what the United States Supreme Court is going to do. The most dangerous thing left for us, we the people, is the law and the court. We have civil law in our courts. We do not have law and equity, as the Constitution says. We have civil law. And as long as we have civil law, that's municipality law, that's law that favors the city, favors those who run the city, who run the nation, the state. It favors those people. It controls the people. And people don't know this. People don't understand this. They go to court and they don't argue or debate the fact that this law has nothing to do with us because they're ignorant to it. Few to no lawyers know this. I believe a lot of the federal judges, probably all the federal judges, they're highly educated, and they understand it, I'm sure. But I don't think many of the judges on the state level, county levels, or any other level really understands this situation with the law. And that's why it's an uphill battle if you go in there to make your argument in the court and you challenge the jurisdiction, which they don't have. But we have to, again, step up and take control of this whole thing. They have given us civil law, and we have to remove that civil law. If we're going to have a liberty and we're going to have a constitution, which they ignore, civil law ignores the constitution. Civil law overrules the constitution. Civil law gives us civil rights and abolishes our unalienable rights. So they are no longer there as long as civil law is still sits in our courts. And the people need to understand it, and we need to take that civil law out of the courts. So it's going to be a very serious situation coming up when we get to the other side, because we're going to watch to see what the United States Supreme Court is going to do. The United States Supreme Court is guilty. Every single one of them, I don't care which one it is, they're all guilty of treason, every one of them. Because they continue in this civil law process. They've worked in this civil law process all the way up to the time they became Supreme Court justices. And they continued in this process. And they know it's a lie. They know it's untrue. They know that you cannot, abrogate the common law, no less with by rules. I mean, how can you think that you can make a rule to abrogate the common law? That's what they did. They made a rule. And the rule became law. And the law became the civil law, and the Constitution was cast out along with equity. It's not there. American jurisprudence is not there anymore, which is, the science of law. But we must return it, and we're going to have to really think and consider very seriously, because the next time we're going to call together for the grand jury is going to be for consideration of indictments against particular specific justices in the United States Supreme Court, and maybe even all of them. Because either we're going to crumble and not do the right thing, the just thing, the necessary thing. We either do the right thing, the just thing, or the necessary thing, or we continue to live in tyranny. We continue to let them rule the courts with civil law, violating our unalienable rights on a daily basis, going into courts that have no due process, that are not possible. They can't give due process in these courts. We go in there looking for it, and we can't get it. Why look for something you cannot get from a civil law court? So the people need to understand this. Everybody hearing my voice needs to understand this. And this is the message of National Liberty Alliance, that we need to take this nation back by taking back our courts, and of course our political process too, which is a committee man. Okay? But they have abrogated equity. They've abrogated natural law. They've abrogated due process. And they've abrogated the Constitution. They've abrogated habeas corpus. They don't want to hear habeas corpus. They don't want to hear that word at all. The only time they use it is when they transport a prisoner, bring it out, maybe go to another court, another state, another where they do the habeas corpus to move the prisoners around. But that's it. That's it. They've concealed common law. They've concealed our courts of record. They've replaced unalienable rights with civil rights. They intimidate and stack and tainted our juries, our grand juries, our trial juries, which is petit juries. They've incarcerated tens of thousands of people over the years without due process. Who knows what that number is? Every person in federal prison is there, and they did not get their due process. Guilty or innocent, they never got their due process. They were never convicted in a court of law. That's a major problem for us. trying to fix that problem when we get to the other side is going to be another problem altogether. But the truth of the matter is, most people in federal prison don't belong there. Most people in county prisons don't belong there. Most people in state prisons don't belong there. So, big, big mess, big, big problem, and we have to deal with it. And we have to become educated enough to understand the system and the process and to know the difference between what is law and what is not law in order to do this. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget what, forget about it. It's, you can't have liberty. You're looking for something you'll never be. So, we must really bring the law back in. We need to understand the difference between these laws, again, civil law and natural law. So, also the Bar Association, okay, they are teaching civil law in place of law and equity. They are the ones, they're the minions of the New World Order. This is why our founding fathers, in I think it was 1819, somewhere around there, where they brought forth the 13th Amendment. That 13th Amendment was for the sole purpose to bar attorneys from taking office or holding any kind of an office of trust. They were not trustworthy. Why? Because they were the minions of the New World Order of that day. They were bringing in civil law. They were doing everything they could to destroy our law, just like they did in England, in Britain. They destroyed natural law there. They destroyed it in the United States. And they continue to destroy it. And then, of course, in the early 1900s, you have the American Bar Association, which picked up that candle for them and continued this thing. You know, so we say that no bar attorney should be able to have a place of trust, an office of trust. And but we do need attorneys that are trained in the necessary codes, which are lawful codes. You know, we have 57 codes written by legislators, and a lot of it is lawful. But of course, there's some problems in a lot of them also in various parts. And they've stuck all these different things and acts and stuff that have created the problem that we have, that have brought in and subverted this whole process and brought in the civil law. So we have to deal with that problem, and of course, we have to know the difference between law and civil law. So anyway, the American Bar Association, they teach civil law in place of law and equity, that's an assault. That's aiding and abetting. That is, oh goodness, let me see if I can find the... there was a quote here. And I'm not seeing it too quickly here. But they're bringing in a law, that we must do something about, and we must turn the table back and get back our common law, natural law, bring it back in to our courts. So anyway, that's our major purpose. I'm still kind of skimming through here to see if I can find a statement here. This might be it here. Let me just read this paragraph or two. This might be what I'm looking for. At least since 1938, the de facto United States Supreme Court and its subservient federal judiciary adjudicated without lawful authority, but by rule, under Roman civil law, in jurisdictions unknown. We have no idea what the jurisdictions are. And they don't even follow their own rules. When you go in and you make the argument, they don't like what they're hearing. They don't care what rules you bring up or laws you bring up that they are being, that they're ruling by. They'll just change them on the spot. It's pretty devious. But anyway, in jurisdictions unknown. Under federal law, if a court is without authority, its judgment and orders are regarded as nullities. They are not voidable, but simply void, and form no bar to a recovery sought. Even prior to a reversal in opposition to them, they constitute no justification, and all persons concerned in executing such judgments or sentences are considered in law as trespassers. So that's what they're doing. They're trespassing. And of course, there's a lot of other, many, many, many other violations that they have been violating, robbing we the people from our courts of justice. Okay, that wasn't the one I was looking for, but I can't find it, so I'll just move on from there. But next week, we'll read that paper, and we need to get the word out. I'm going to try to work on our YouTube this week. We have two YouTubes to go up. One will be this paper that we're just filing now. I've just finished the YouTube on that, as a matter of fact, but I have to get access to YouTube and upload it. There is another one that we're going to be filing, and that is Introduction to National Liberty Alliance, which is a video that I made for the sole purpose for people to have at their meetings, maybe their first meeting when organizing their county. That's the video that they should play. It's a video PowerPoint, and it is 50 minutes long. And it's a good introduction. It covers a lot of bases. It doesn't get too deep into anything particularly, but it does cover a lot of bases and give sort of an overview of what it is that we're doing. And then we'll be making a lot of these PowerPoint videos. Probably a lot of them are short, maybe 15, 20 minutes long, some a half hour long. We might have some that are 45, but I think most of them are going to be pretty short. Because we do want to bring the issues to the people in their meetings. We want them to see and understand and learn the process of what's going on in the judicial process as well as the political process, and get them to start discussing these things on the grassroots level. And so again, we'll be creating all these PowerPoint videos now. We're also doing some instructional videos for the administrators of the grand jury and the trial jury. And we're also, we're going to be putting together a book, a handbook for the administrators to assist them in the job that they'll be taking up. So that handbook should be very helpful to them. The videos and topics that we'll be discussing in these videos will be very, very important to them. And of course, our courses. We've got three courses up there right now: government by consent course, the militia course, and the civil course. All three of these courses are important. The most important at this point in time, I believe, is the government by consent course, because it focuses in on the problem specifically and gives us a good understanding of the court system, the law, the difference between law and equity, and how things work, now is the time to prepare, and the time to get educated, and the time to take positions. We had a meeting with the leadership about a week ago, and we talked at that meeting about all of us, including myself, all of us need to start a liberty movement in our own counties. We need to start it, to spark it off, to get it going. And so we've got quite a bit of leadership, so we should be able to pump up about 150 or so counties to activate them within the next month or so. Of course, we have to wait until this emergency is over, but we could be planning now and preparing. We've been making some phone calls with some people, and get together, through the computers online, or even getting together for a cup of coffee somewhere or something. Of course, a lot of places are closed down, so that's not really too much available to us. But I think in a week or two that will be, so having those kind of meetings. Which again, the plan is that one person starts off and starts to get the Liberty Group movement going in your county, and the focus is really to learn how to take control of our government on the grassroots level, and it takes one person to get it started, and that one person that gets it started does not necessarily have to take a position, a leadership position, if that's what they don't want, but we can all start it and get it going. And it starts off with one person, you know, connecting with one other person and getting together and discussing these things. And then between those two people, they become three and they become four and maybe five or six. But once they become four, five, or six, at that point, then they should plan a meeting. And we've given a lot of information. We've written this stuff up, but we've given a lot of information and ideas on how you can get a meeting started, where you would want to, you know, get the meeting going at, you know. You need a good venue. Usually libraries and town halls are some of the best venues you can get. So those are two places you can go to, and there's many, many other places. Centrally located for the population of the county. But once you get four or five people together, you can now form a committee. You can create. You can get a chairman, co-chairman, a secretary, and a treasurer. And the four people who are taking those positions, they don't have to hold them if they don't want them, but just you can hold them until we can get things going and start to get a membership. There'll be plenty of people who come and say and want to take those positions up. But ultimately, those positions need to be, once people want to take those positions or once someone wants to leave that position, that person has to be voted in by the rest of the people in that group. But anyway, we need to do it formally. And formally bringing these groups together, we have to form a committee, you know, again. You have to have a chairman, a co-chairman, a secretary, and a treasurer. Four, sometimes five people, and even a little more if necessary, depending on the size of your group. It's very important that these positions are created and started, and you start your meetings. And again, you know, as people grow, other people can take those positions if you don't want them, those positions, for whatever reasons. I don't have the time to actually take a leadership role in my county, but I certainly will go and start the group up, make some phone calls, and get things going. But I think we can be kind of doing this in the next week or so over the internet, you know, the phones or the computer or whatever. And maybe in a week or two or so, we can have a couple of, you know, close meetings, two or three or four people, and then plan for the actual first meeting. And that actual first meeting, when you're thinking about it, will be 20 or 30 days down the road, roughly speaking. And again, we give a lot of ideas where you can get people that might be interested in this to come to that meeting. There are a lot of liberty groups still around in a lot of counties, so you can kind of draw off of that, draw off a membership. There's lots of things. And again, we've written and put all the stuff together. It may not be totally complete at the moment, but we do have a lot of stuff that you can find under our members. Which is you click on committees. No, that's not it. That's not, oh, people's duty. I'm sorry. People's duty. Click under people people's duty. You highlight that, and you click on organizing your county. And we got a lot of information here, and we'll have more. We'll be posting more. So what we're looking for is people to commit to get things going in their county. Again, it starts with one person. It starts with one person realizing it needs to be done, making the commitment to themselves and actually doing it, calling, finding one other person to meet and talk with, and moving it along to three or four, and then plan a meeting. And then we have a plan that we're laying out. We're going to be training people, teaching people through these short videos, which are PowerPoint videos, where at the end of them, again, they'll be discussing those things, encouraging them to come to the website to take the courses, to get the people educated. So anybody who wants to make a commitment, and I think everyone should make this commitment, and again, like I said, to get it started, anybody can do that. So make that commitment. Get a hold of Francine. I think we'll have someone else appointed for this, but right now just get a hold of Francine or Jan, and let them know that you want to, that you're going to step up, and you're going to take and motivate yourself. You're going to take on the duty of getting something started in your county. And we're going to make a note of that person and that county, and we'll get them to a meeting, maybe discussing some more ideas. But it's up to you to come to that meeting at that point to let us know how things are going. And once you get to the point where you have four people, and you're ready for your first real meeting where you're going to invite lots of people to it, and maybe not lots of people will come, Maybe you'll invite 20 people or 10 people, and maybe only 5 will show up or 8 will show up. Maybe you'll invite 100 people. I mean, I know I can make a lot of calls and probably invite 100 people, but I'll be ultimately very glad if 30 show up out of that. So whatever comes, comes. But at that first meeting, then to notify us that the first meeting has started, and we're going to start tracking this because we really need to push the grassroots on every county to become educated and to take control of their own government, of their destiny on the grassroots level, because that's where the real control is at. Teaching people to become committee men, teaching people to become administrators, talking to them about the grand jury and the trial jury and their duty to respond when they're called, understanding how the court system works, understanding that civil law is not law and that we need to take it out. It's repugnant to the Constitution. It needs to be ripped out of the courts like a cancer. And we need to bring back the law of the land back into our courts. And if we don't do that, America will not be great again. It'll only have the appearance. It'll be a facade, just like it's been for all of my lifetime, just a facade. You know, the people were willing, but the people running our country, the people in power, evil has took control of those people, and it's all for them and power and money and it's just nothing but corruption. But the people need to take it back, and this is what we need to do to take it back. Okay. All right. Like I said, next week we'll read that paper. Jan, do we have any announcements to be made? Or Terry? Not sure who's here for that. I know Jan was having mic problems also.
We have succeeded in getting people for all 10 districts for the committee men. We have, I think, it's 3 for the militia district leaders. We could use 7 more there. Plus, we need backups.
But bear in mind, let me correct this. I'm trying to, because there's a misunderstanding of these district leaders. The district leaders are to work with their states to stimulate the state leaders to work with the county organizers to get the grassroots going in all of those things, the militia, whether they want to do, well, they should be doing all of them. You know, look, one group of people in a county may be pushing more towards the militia than anything else, but as other people come in and they see all the things and someone else will pick up on the committee men, actually all militia men should pick up on the committee men and vice versa. So it's people need to understand that the purpose of the 10 districts is to try to handle communications all the way down into the county level. So, you know, you have the national leadership, and then you have 10 districts, and each one of those districts covers so many states, some as little as 3 states and some as many as 7 states. And they need to connect with the state coordinators and encourage and work with them to stimulate, first of all, the state coordinators should start a group within their own counties, so just like the district leaders should be starting a group in their own counties within their own states. And they should be working with the county organizers, assisting them to get these groups up and going and start to get educated, to look into the militia, to look into the committeemen, to look into the administrations for the grand and trial jury, to come to an understanding of how things work politically and judicially. So, again, it's not that, and we'll have matter of fact, we should have a special meeting with those people and talk some and make sure we all understand we're on the same page. Maybe next Monday in the regular meeting, maybe I'll come in and we'll talk with those 10 district leaders. And anybody else who wants to be a district leader, we have lots of leadership positions opened in National Liberty Alliance. But the most important position that anyone could have is the position in your own county as one of the people working with the other people to take back control of your destiny by taking back control of our judicial and political process. You don't have control of your destiny until you take that back. And the people have not had it for a long, long, long time. And that's why we're such a mess, and that's why the United States has really been really building democracies around the world for the sole purpose of evil, really, because democracy is really just the first step for an oligarchy. you create a democracy and an illusion that the people are in control by telling you get the vote and whatever else to give them. But anyway, behind the scenes, you know, you get your president, you get this and you get that. But behind the scenes, they're controlled by a small group of people. Only one person usually stands up and, you know, makes the illusion, the facade of being the elected president or whatever the case may be. So that's the problem we have. We have to fix it. So the real work and the real power and authority is on the county level. And that's what we want to teach, and that's what we want to people to understand, and we want people to take that up. But go ahead, Jan. What else?
Well, that's about, other than backups for those people, they were the only things. We do have, you know, we talked, you and I talked about a press release type of thing that we could be sending out to newspapers and TV and radio sorts of things. We have only one person, Roslyn, at the moment that's working on gathering up addresses and places to send these things. We could use several volunteers to give her a hand and look up these addresses and get things through. So as soon as we get the documents, we could get them out to people. So that's
why don't you get the national leadership brainstorming the ideas as others are working on the addresses and stuff. But let's get some ideas brainstormed. Have they done that yet?
Yeah, we decided it was a good thing to do this, to get it out. We need to advertise. Advertising is our problem.
Yeah, but we have to have
a
plan.
Message.
Right,
we have
to have a
great message. Well, we had the plan, I guess, to... we have this group already started with to locate people for the radio interviews and so on, and we thought we'd just add this task on to that and go from there, you know?
Okay, great. All right, if we, you know, well, if you need any meetings to really work a lot of the details out, and if you want me involved, let me know. But I do want to get involved in talking, at least in the beginning, to the people who are running as district leaders. Let's try to get a meeting, set up. We'll pick a day. Let me think here. When do we pick a date? Maybe this week. Is this week good, maybe? Maybe on Wednesday or something?
Yeah, Wednesday's doable.
Do we have, is the meeting room open for us on Wednesday?
Yes, it is.
Is nobody using it? Okay, so why don't we say 9 o'clock Wednesday. Anybody who is or wants to be a district leader, come to that meeting. Anybody who is or wants to be a state coordinator, come to that meeting. Because those are the people we really want to talk to try to work out organizing the nation by stimulating all the way down into the county level to get these people up and working and doing and learning and taking control of our nation. Because, you know, if the people don't have control, then guess who gets control? The people in power. And they seem to think that they can do whatever they want after a while. What is that that saying, power corrupts absolutely or something?
Power corrupts absolute. Power corrupts absolutely.
There it is. Okay, that's what happens. They go to Washington or to their capital, state capital. They get this power and this big fat head after a while, and next thing you know, they become part of the system. I can't tell you how many of these people in the Tea Party movements and the different groups, they went in and they get corrupted. And sometimes they don't even realize that they've been corrupted, so to speak. But, okay. Any other announcements?
No, that's pretty much it. We have questions tonight.
Okay, in a minute we'll take questions. Let me just reiterate. Wednesday, 9 p.m., a meeting. Get out an email tonight or tomorrow morning, maybe, to invite anyone that hasn't been here for today's program, that we're going to have a special meeting for anyone that is or is interested in becoming a district leader, or is or is interested in becoming a state coordinator. Give us a, you know, come to this meeting, invite him to the meeting. And let's really work this to organize it, and let's come to an understanding of what it is we need to do in order to be successful. Okay, what kind of questions do you have?
Okay, the first question is, would it be better to use plain English in our lawful writing to... or in comparison to using Latin, which could possibly widely be construed or misconstrued or uninformed, I guess.
Right. Latin for what now? I don't understand the question, do you? Jen, I didn't understand the question.
They're just asking if we should just be using plain English rather than some of the Latin names for these documents and so on.
Oh, like a writ quo warranto or something
right.
like that?
Exactly.
Well, I wouldn't mess around much with using Latin per se, but there are certain things, it is what it is, they understand it, we understand it, and it's in Black's Law, it's been there for a long time, so we'll continue to use a writ mandamus. I presume you're saying that that's Latin. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that's fine. We're not going to change the name. No, we need to continue with those names. There's not that many of them. Writ mandamus is one of the most important ones that we can really look at. Writ quo warranto, which is a show cause, and if you fail, you discontinue yourself as whatever that entity might be. You can shut down a city with a writ quo warranto if it's being abusive by the leadership. Of course, the question becomes is how do you do that after the writ quo warranto, you know? But that could be done by court order, but the question is how do you get a court to order that unless we the people take control of that court. And that's what we've done. We have taken control of the court. You know, we opened this court of record back in 2016. And with this court of record, we opened it up to a depository to deposit all, a place to put all of our papers, all of our paperwork when we send out these memorandums or informations or writ mandamuses to different individuals, maybe the governors or legislators of the state or legislators of the federal, U.S. Senate and Congress, or even to the United States Supreme Court, and even to the president, which we had done for quite some time, papers. We were filing papers, habeas corpuses, and filing them up there. And then we opened it up to actually go against the United States Supreme Court, because they're the responsible ones, along with both houses. And we also went after all of the governors to some degree with some paperwork, but particularly New York governor and Virginia governor because of the Second Amendment problem, particularly in those two states by those two governors. In August, let me think when this was. I know it was August, I think, the 17th is when we started to make decisions and orders. Prior to that, we were a year and a half or so where we were filing papers, asking questions, demanding, return to the common law and so on and so forth, and they failed to answer all of it. So now it's time to make a final judgment. People need to understand that's how a court of record works. The tribunal is the people. We've opened up a true court of record. It is definitely an organic court of record, one that has come up from the ground, from the people. And you can't get any more natural law than that. That's what we've opened up. And it doesn't matter that a judge keeps trying to close us down, tried three times, but he has silenced us. He really hasn't shut us down. Paper's still going in, still being collected, still being filed, still being delivered. But nevertheless, he is conspiring to prevent people that may call up other judges or individuals about this case, and he is preventing them, he's concealing the case from them. We have a true court. People need to understand the power and the authority of it. Reality is the way one perceives it. As long as you believe in the lie, then you'll continue to live in the lie. But when you can believe in the truth, then you can start to live in that truth. This is the truth. We are, the court of record. We are the common law court. We, the people, are the jury. We are the de jure court. They are the de facto court. And they're null and void. They have no power, no authority. The problem is they're all gangsters and they've got the guns. So they put us in jail and they do whatever they want. We need to turn that around. This isn't our opportunity. We will never, ever, ever have an opportunity like we have right now when this deep state is finally annihilated, that's the opportunity. And if we miss it, it's going to be filled by people in power. We're going to lose it, and we'll never have that opportunity again. The time for rising up and taking authority and power and knowledge is now. all right, next, we'll go to the next question, I guess.
Okay. I have been hearing about land patents or allodial titles discussed more and more frequently, although briefly, on the Thursday night discussion calls, and was wanting to know if this can become a major subject discussion on a Monday night sometime. I'm interested in procuring one on our land property.
Well, people are pursuing those things because they're trying to be taken out of the tax rolls. And we can spend time discovering how they claim it to be done to reverse what they've done to bring back the allodial titles. But that's going to take a lot of energy, uphill battling, and in most cases we won't win. One might win here or there. So that's not the place to really make the battle, to make the war. You know, we can lose battles here or there, but we have to win the war. We have to fight the places that are most important that will give us the leverage to win the war. And that fight is in the court, the federal district court. Because once the law is applied, once the common law returns to the federal courts, there's no contest, nothing even to discuss of the fact that it must flow down to the state courts. It's got to win the federal court. You only have to win it in one place. You know, the federal districts, it's one federal court, it's just districts. So you just have to win in that court where the people take back the courts, court of law, and they go back to courts of equity, as far as the judges are concerned, under American jurisprudence. So what happens then? Well, it's unlawful to tax someone's property and home. I mean, you don't own it if you're paying rent to somebody. As a matter of fact, let me think of what's the word they use. They use the word tenant in these titles, and so it'll be an automatic thing. We'll be back to true ownership of property. There'll be allodial titles. There'll be no more tax on property. And that's that. You buy property once, and if they tax you the property when you purchase it, okay, you can accept that. It's a one-time tax, and it's on a purchase, and it's a legal tax, but to pay that tax or some kind of a crazy tax year after year after year, sometimes even more than people might pay rent in some areas, and that's unlawful. So we don't have to make that battle here. That's an automatic win, as is many, many other things. Agenda 21 is out, an automatic win once we get the courts back. There is nothing that you can even think of that you realize is wrong and needs to be changed that cannot be an automatic win once we get the courts back. The IRS has got to go. It looks like Trump's got a plan to get rid of them already. The Federal Reserve has to go, and looks like Trump's got a plan for that already. You know, I've often said that we shouldn't pay the debt. And Trump now is talking about the same way. Other people have been talking about the why pay the debt? It's not our debt. We didn't make that debt. That was all fraud. We've been robbed. We're not going to give the robber money, are we? They've already robbed us. That's why Trump is really hitting hard. We were spending all this money rebuilding America with all this stupid funny money. He knows what he's doing, because at the end of the day, he's not paying it back. That's what we're owed. We're owed a lot more than that. They've robbed our lives, our futures, our children, our parents. They've robbed us. They've robbed our homes. They've taken... You know, they've taxed everything. They've licensed every right you can think of. And all of this is all connected. It all goes back to the banksters. It goes right back to the Federal Reserve. So, you know, all of that, we don't have to fight or to learn how to do an allodial title. We do have information. We do know someone who had done it. We can probably dig up all that stuff. But why exercise and waste our time there on battles that's not going to win the war, but going to be won when the war is won? All battles become really irrelevant because the war is won. We get it all. So we shouldn't worry about it right now. If we're going to learn anything, learn about the system, the judicial system, the political system. Learn the difference between law and equity. learn how things work, learn about our heritage, to get things that empower us, learn about the militia, learn about our civics, how we got to where we're at in true American history and the common law, learn consent of government, how to have consent of government. These are the things that empower us. All the rest of it, we just take. We don't have to fight for them. We're just going to take it. Very simple, because it's the law. All right, next question.
What does the U.S. Constitution say about declaring a national state of emergency?
Well, the state of emergency, of course, can be declared by a governor or a president, and everything he's doing is right. That I can see. We're very fortunate, actually, because if Hillary Clinton was in there, we probably would be going into a state of emergency also today, but it'd be a scary one that we might have to start lock and loading for, to prepare for. But that's not the case here. The president has a duty. He's been given a lot of authority and power by Congress. They've discussed a lot of these things out. The president has probably a little bit more power than he should need or should have. But Trump, of course, is going to make use of that power. But that's something we, the people, need to discuss more if we think that the president has been given too much power, that we didn't give the authority for that power. If it is repugnant to the Constitution, then we can do something about that and fix that. But again, we can't do nothing until we get to the other side of this thing. We have to have authority. We have to have authority in the courts. We have to win the courts back. Again, this is something, you could say it 10 times and people don't get it because we've been so brainwashed in a different direction that we're not hearing it. And that as much as we're trying to hear it, we're still not hearing it. I'll try to say it again. The people run courts of law. The United States Supreme Court has no business in it. They cannot overrule us. As a matter of fact, we can overrule them. A court of law overrules the United States Supreme Court. Of course, we don't disturb the equity and the balance of that law once it has its jurisprudence and it's operating under American jurisprudence, of course. But once it steps outside of that, we can stop it. That's the people's job. That's the people's duty. That's the power of the court. That's the power of the jury. Whatever they say, they not only get to decide the facts, they get to decide the law. And they also get to decide the penalty. They also get to decide whether they like the law or not, if it is some kind of a statute or a code that's lawful to apply in a case, maybe with someone with a contract or someone with a working government agency or some commercial activities, where there are certain codes and that they have to follow. That's the law. We've given Congress the power and the authority to write those laws to protect our commercial activities and exchange of trade and so on and so forth. Okay, and also to control the agencies that they don't overrun their power and authority. Everything is controlled by those codes, those 57 codes. The problem is they're trying to apply them to us, we the people. That they cannot do. We're under natural law. But we control the courts. We even control whether we like those codes or not. As a trial jury, you can say, we don't like that code. We don't like that statute. We're not going to apply it against this person. Or they may just come out of left field with something totally that's obviously true, a maxim of some kind, that's applied against the individual. Or maybe before the individual that's going to trial. So the people need to understand that the judge is not a judge, he's a magistrate. Every judge is a magistrate. When a judge is ruling in an equity court, he's ruling as a jurist, a judge. He's a jurist, a single jurist. And that jurist could be his decision, can be appealed. You go to an appellate court. And it can be appealed a second time and even up to the United States Supreme Court. When you get a court of record that has a tribunal, there is no appeal from that court. No one can change the decisions of that court of record. It ends the whole thing. It solves the problem and it's over. Now, the only way that anyone, although they take these cases all the time to try to overturn a case here or there with a jury. Well, they're all civil law anyway, so they're not even playing on the right rules anyway. So, but in the way it works, you can't overrule that. Now, if someone's unalienable rights was violated somehow during that process, then that person can be protected by a judge in a federal district court who has the responsibility to make sure that someone's unalienable rights are not violated. And that could, of course, run up to the Supreme Court. That's their duty. When we take a case into a federal court for cause, for instance, in a court that doesn't have jurisdiction, a court that's incapable of giving due process, and we move that case into a federal court, and we go before a judge, not a jury, we go before a judge, it's a foregone conclusion of the matter that judge is to rule for us who are moving that case, because all we have to show, as long as it's true, and in these cases that we've been doing, it is true, they don't have jurisdiction over the individual. They're incapable of giving due process, and they're violating their right of due process. And that judge has a duty, by summary judgment, to make that correction and order that correction and tell that court to cease and desist from all of its activity and to restore that individual back to their original state. We can even ask for some other damages. We usually tap on there $1,000 of real money, face value, and in the footnotes, face value, Morgan coins. $1,000 in Morgan coins, face value. It's about it's more than that. It's about $1,700-$1,800 right now. I mean, say $17,000-$18,000 right now, because it's probably about $18 for a silver dollar, roughly speaking. So, but that's, you see, that's using the court system the way it's supposed to work. They should understand that. You should never move a case into a federal court and lose. Unless you just don't understand how things are working and you're moving it for the wrong reason and making the wrong argument, you know, the only thing a federal court can hear, a federal district judge, the only court case he can hear or she can hear, is a court case that is violating someone's unalienable right. That's the cause. Okay, they don't get to decide whatever the case was about. That doesn't even come to play. And if that court doesn't have jurisdiction, it's irrelevant what that case is about. Cease and desist. Stop immediately. That's the order of the court. So every judge is a magistrate. And so when he's in an equity court, he's wearing his judge hat. He's a jurist. He's a single jurist. Makes a decision, final move, and it could be appealed. Okay? When that judge is sitting in a courtroom with a jury, he's just an administrator. He can tell that jury nothing. All he does is give them the oath. That's it. Either just like the grand jury gives them the oath. That's it. No instructions to the jury. They're not supposed to be told, well, you know, I'll explain the law to you. It's not for the judge. That's violating the grand jury itself. That's polluting them. Trying to take control of them. So the jury is supposed to have total control. That administrator in that court is there for the sole purpose of playing the traffic cop, moving things along, making sure each side comes accordingly and gets their points of view up and out there, to maintain the decorum of the court, uphold the power and the authority of the court as the tribunal, which is the trial jury. And so when that jury comes to a conclusion, okay, that judge, it's the duty of the judge to take that conclusion and to exercise and execute the judgments that come from that conclusion, to put the order out to the sheriff for execution if necessary, whatever the case may be, to have an individual incarcerated. Whatever the judgment of the jury is, so that administrator is there for the sole purpose as pretty much like a when you do an affidavit and you get a notary, pretty much the same thing as that. You know, you come and make a swearing statement, and that becomes a powerful paper once the notary signs it and seals it, and now it's a fact. It's a fact in a court case. Well, the same thing. This is a fact at the conclusion of the court. The judge puts his signature on it as a notary. He's the administrator. You know, he is the administrator of the court, and then he puts the seal on it, and he pushes it forward for execution. They have no other job. There is no other job for them, and they're not to be involved in the case in any way in the decision making or explaining the meaning of the law or any of those things. Okay, I'm sure I got far off base on that one too, but what's next?
Okay, next question. Do you know of the first incarnation of the National Guard? In a recent video, Dave from X22 Report displayed a recent article where the National Guard reservist wrote an article discussing how long the National Guard's been helping local officials during a health crisis and believes they're trying to take credit for the works of various state militias. This article says the National Guard's been at it doing what they
do. Hold on. Let's do this. Let's take the next question. When Brent gets up, maybe this is a question we can address to him because he's a lot more knowledgeable in that area than I am. Okay, so let's hold that question off until the end when Brent gets up and we'll pass it to him. But what's your next question?
That was the last one.
Oh, goody goody.
Yeah. Goody
goody. Okay, well, I've said all that I've had to say, I think. And and again, I just want to reinforce, you got to get active. You got to raise up your county. You're where the rubber hits the road. You are the driver of this plan to take back our nation. It's up to you, every single person, to get their county going and operating. And again, even if you aren't the major player in there, you need to be a participant. I will be a participant. I will go to every monthly meeting. It's my duty to do that. I'll give my thoughts and ideas. I don't want any kind of a leadership role in that. And if you don't want a leadership role in that too, that's fine. But if you do want, that's fine too, whatever it is. But the point is we all must participate in our own grassroots level, in our own counties. It's up to us to get it started. It's up to everybody that is a district leader to start thinking and planning for it. That's what we're going to talk about on Wednesday. It's up to all of the national leadership to start thinking and planning for this. It's up to the founding members to start thinking and planning about this and taking care of their counties to get it executed, to get it going. It's up to every state coordinator to execute the process in their own county and get it going. And then all of us working together on the national level is to stimulate down into the states level and into the county level to get these going. Once I get things going in my county, I live in Dutchess County, okay, in New York. And most people probably don't have no idea where that's at, but that's fine. Dutchess County, New York, okay. But the county to the left of me and the county to the right of me, you know, I get two counties to the left of me. We go to the right, we fall off the other side and into Connecticut there. But anyway, the county, we have two counties. I cross a bridge and go down 3 miles one way, and you're in Ulster County. You come up through, you know, go across the bridge, you're in Orange County. And so right around me and below me, there's also Rockland County, and there's, goodness, what's the other one down here? Putnam County and even Westchester County. So I know I got influence in a lot of those counties because I used to go to a lot of meetings in all of those counties. I know a lot of the leaders and the different people involved in things. And I'm sure a lot of other people know people in other counties too. So once I get my county going, I am going to work to try to stimulate the counties around me, calling them sister counties, let's say. So, each one of us has the ability not only to stimulate, the rising of the people in the grassroots level in their own counties, but you also have the ability to get it going in the counties, to influence the counties around you. And if we have, let's say, 200, 300 leaders, let's say the state leaders 50 plus, I think we got about 100, but let's say 100 roughly, and we got 10 district leaders, it's 110, okay? And of course, the founding members and and so on. So maybe we got 120, 130 people, okay, that will go out and do what they got to do. But each one of us has the potential of getting three or more counties around us also going. So let's say that, let's say it's 100 people, so we can get, 100 counties on our own going, but then we can also get another three for each, so another three. We can stimulate the growth of 300. You see, at some point, it moves like wildfire. But we got to get up and do it. You know, there's a saying out there about good intentions, and wasn't it the road to Rome, or road to somewhere built on good intention? Does anybody remember that saying?
I thought it was the road to hell was paved with good intentions.
Well,
isn't that correct?
No, I don't think so. Good intentions is for something, but maybe true too on that too, you know. But look at good intentions. People have good intentions, and if they have a good intention, but they, you know, the intention is there, but they never bring it to being. Okay, so we all have good intentions to do something. We say we want to do this, and then we never do it. We never do it. We got to take that step forward. We got to become active. We got to recreate our habits and our thinking and our motivations and where we're going and what we're doing. And once we make that step forward, that one step, that first step, and you get that first meeting, then there's a stimulation between two people, and two people have made that step, and then the third person comes in, and a fourth person comes in, and before you know it, you've made five or six steps, and with five or six people, and then you've created a habit. The next thing you know, on Monday, the first Monday of the month, we have a meeting, or Tuesday, first Tuesday, whatever it is, okay, whatever day of the month, it becomes the habit, and you go to the meeting, and if it's boring, or off base, or doesn't stimulate, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. But we're going to make sure we have good stuff that will stimulate, that's not boring, that will empower. And once you start doing that, you see, now you get the things going, the juices are flowing. Nothing's going to stop that as long as it keeps getting fed. But if you don't make that first step, it's only a good intention, and it goes nowhere, and it does nothing. And if you think the other guy is doing it, I'm here to tell you he's not. You got to do it. Okay. Where are we going from here? Was there anything else? Well, I guess we're going to move over to Gerard and Brent. I guess that's
going to go. I have nothing else, John, so it's time.
Okay. Anybody else in here that has any of the leaders or anything, anybody with a committee that wants to make a statement, the mic is open for them if they want. The other thing is we need more reporting. So I know the meeting, the leadership is in the meeting pretty regular and growing, and things are happening. I was in there a little bit today, listening in and out because I was trying to work on other things. But in any event, it's really time to push the people forward with these things, to take these commitments, and the meetings is the first thing. That's the first step. People are participating, and that's the first step. But you got to keep it exciting, and we'll do the best we can to do that. All right, let's move over to Gerard. Are you here? I see you're in the room. You got to unmute yourself if you're talking to me, though. Calling Gerard. Okay. All right, maybe he'll be back by the time Brent gets done. Brent, are you here? Mute your mic. Star 6 on you. There you go. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to pass things to you. Let me just introduce you. And Jen's got a question that maybe you'd be best to be able to answer concerning the militia. But before you ask that question, this is Brent Winters, who's the author of many books, and one of them is The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com, and he comes every Monday to teach us a little something about our heritage. You got the mic, and Jen, can you ask him the question where he can start off with that maybe?
Sure. Do you know of the first incarnation of the National Guard? In a recent video, Dave from X22 Report displayed a recent article where a National Guard reservist wrote an article discussing how long the National Guard has been helping local officials during a health crisis, and believes they're trying to take credit for the works of various state militias. This article says the National Guard's been at it doing what they do since the 1600s, yet they're a constitutional unknown and probably didn't begin until early 1900s.
Well, first thing that I like to always say about the National Guard is it's not the militia of the several states. And the distinguishing feature that makes the difference, one of the distinguishing features, I should say a salient distinguishing feature, is that the National Guard, all of its equipment, is issued. Yes, thank you, Terry. I'm turning it up as much as I can here. All of the equipment of the National Guard is issued at the expense of the United States or of the state, and there's a mixture of the two. That's not what the militia is. The militia is that subset of Americans, male, over about 20 years of age, able-bodied to bear a weapon in battle. That's what the militia is. It doesn't make any difference whether you're on the rolls or you aren't on the rolls. When the sheriff comes to organize or call out that subset of the militia, of the state militia, called the posse, short for posse comitatus, that's Latin for the possibility of the county. Posse in Latin means ability, latent power, posse. And we get our word possibility from it. The English word is ableness or can do. I can. That's what that means. That doesn't mean that you are doing it. It means you can do it. Well, the posse is a subset in the county of the militia. And the posse, when it's mustered, it brings its own weapons. Each person brings its own his own weapon. And the militia statute that each state is supposed to have in place, that the legislature of each state is supposed to pass, and is supposed to tell each member of the militia, in other words, again, the able-bodied males around 20 years old and upward, tell them what kind of a firearm the law requires them to purchase at their own expense. You see, even Switzerland doesn't have the militia. Every male is required to serve and to be ready and to keep his firearm in good condition in his home. And when he reaches that age where he is not a part of the active group that they call the militia, they give him his firearm. But before that, it belongs to the government. Well, that's not the militia. The militia, as we understand it, only exists in common law countries. The National Guard is an attempt by the powers that be to preempt, to forestall any need for the militia of the several states to think that they need to do anything. It's an attempt to overcome our Constitution of the United States, its four militia clauses. Oh, it looks like the militia, it smells like the militia, it feels like the militia, but it's not the militia. It's the National Guard. And it's a member of the armed forces of the United States in a different way. Now, the militia can become a part of the armed forces of the United States when called into service by the President of the United States. We've never in America hammered out what the jurisdiction and the duties of the militia are. There have been times, for instance, back when George Washington was President of the United States, he called out the militia to do different things, like put down the Whiskey Rebellion and things like that. And when the militia of one state was called out to go into another state, the governors of some of those states said, we're not going to allow our militia to leave this state because we have no duty outside of this state. Well, that's not true. I'm amazed, even going back then, how either they didn't know or they just wanted to fight and they hated the, whoever was in the presidency, or they had a personal grudge. That causes problems. Listen, if the president of the United States calls out the militia of Alabama or Texas, let's say Texas or Alabama, to move over and to move over by train or truck or however he gets them there to Arizona to repel an invasion of drug lords from Mexico into Arizona, well, he has authority to do that. The Constitution grants him authority to do that. Now, if the governor of the state musters the militia of Arizona or Texas first, then the president does not have authority to muster the militia of that state. Anything the governor has already mustered, he doesn't have authority to muster, unless the governor gives up his authority in the national interest, which could happen too. All these things are pretty well settled at law, but governors are ignorant, contrary, hateful, selfish, scared, and so they don't follow the law. That's why most of us don't follow the law, any law that's real, that's good. We don't do it for those kinds of reasons. But the law is the law, and if it's true law, we have a duty to follow it. And in this case, the militia is true law. And the way we've done it is true. Well, the National Guard, you know, you can go. I just pulled up here. Let's see, back up. This fellow you were talking about wrote this article. He probably went to Wikipedia, because the things you said, that's the way this article here. Wikipedia starts out, it says, the first muster of the militia forces in what today the United States is the United States took place on September 16, 1565, in the newly established Spanish military town of St. Augustine. That's hogwash. That's impossible. Why? Because the Spaniards, don't have a militia. No, they're under the law of the city. They're under the law of the city. They might have done a lot of things, but it wasn't what we would call the Volkreich, the people themselves. No, their whole legal tradition is contrary to that. Mexico never had a militia. None of the Spanish-speaking countries did, because they're Roman law countries, like Louisiana, because of the Roman Church's influence especially. The military tradition this continued with the first permanent English settlements in the New World. See, they're conflating. They're saying, well, the English settlements were just like the Spanish settlements. That's not true. No, not at all. They were, what was that historian's name? He said, well, two different people, two different languages, two different religions, two different world views of law and government. That's true. That's the way we were with the French. There had to be a war with the French sooner or later, and there was. And the common law won out. The militia tradition, this thing says, oh yeah, we got that. The first national laws regulating the militia were the Militia Acts of 1792. Well, two paragraphs of baloney, and they got one sentence right. The Militia Act of 1792, an act of Congress, trying to put in place, to put in motion, the requirements of the four militia clauses of the United States Constitution. And then it goes on talking about from the nation's founding through the early 1900s, the United States maintained only minimal army, that's true, and relied on state militias, directly related to the early colonial militias to supply the majority of its troops. I remember the State House in Illinois used to have a wooden leg in it. Not the State House, it was in the State House for a while, the State Capitol. It was a wooden leg. It was the wooden leg of, what was that fellow's name down there in Mexico? Santa Anna, the one that attacked the Alamo. They had his wooden leg in the State House, in a glass case. And the reason they had his wooden leg in the State House was because the Illinois militia was the one that captured him down there in Mexico. After the Texas War with Mexico, then Texas was brought in as a state, and then America went to war with Mexico, and Santa Anna was still down there. He finally got to fiddling around. He was always insulting people and got his leg blowed off with a cannon. Had a wooden leg. Well, he was still playing the big shot. They captured him, and when somehow they got his wooden leg, and well, that was the militia. And that's the way we did business. That was in the 1840s and 1830s, 40s, up into the the war between the northern and the southern tiers of the states. And so this militia idea was working out pretty good, but the United States government, the general government, didn't like it because they couldn't get troops by just having them when they wanted them. They had to ask the governors to help them organize the militia. You remember when the Confederate states attacked and got real close to Washington, D.C., Abraham Lincoln was president, and he panicked. He said, good gravy. These people are going to capture the national capital. And nobody, truth is, before that, this is a true story, nobody really knew much about Washington, D.C. Nobody even cared. The national government had so little power. Then all of a sudden it was threatened, and he put out a call for 20,000 troops immediately from his home state, which was Illinois. And Illinois responded, of course. That's why he put it out there, because people knew him and he thought they would support him. Well, they got men in there in the White House and the Capitol, sleeping on the floor of the Capitol building, armed, ready to drive out invaders. They finally got it done, but they didn't feel like they had control of troops that could act quickly, and that bothered them. Well, then after the Spanish-American War, which was in, I believe, 1898, yeah, that's about right, the cry was on to do something to have a more ready force. Well, see, the militia is supposed to be the ready force. That's why the Second Amendment, the fourth of the militia clauses, says that you're to have your duty, that is your right, that is a duty, that's what a right is, to keep a loaded firearm and to carry it wherever you go. That was the idea. Well, if you're carrying your loaded firearm wherever you go, you're ready at a moment's notice, no matter what happens. Well, that's the whole idea. But they didn't think at that time that we had troops ready. So during 1903, and I'm going through this article, they say some things are true, but when they get to the 1898, I got that date right. Well, in 1903, the Dick Act was passed, and the legislator, the congressman's name was Dick. Not his first name, his last name. And that was the predecessor, that was the beginning of the idea of the modern-day National Guard. And it required the states, I'm reading here, I'm quoting, it required the states to divide their militias into two sections. And the law recommended the title National Guard for the first section, known as the Organized Militia, and the Reserve Militia for all others. But the militia is not to be divided into organized and unorganized. The militia is the militia, and the militia is ready at all times. And during World War I, Congress then passed the National Defense Act of 1916. I'm going through the information they have here. I just pulled it up, which required the use of the term National Guard for state militias. Now, you see what's happening here? I mean, no question World War I was a war to try to nationalize everything, including world government. That's all that was about. And so they said you can't anymore use the word National Guard. You can't say the Maryland Guard or the Pennsylvania Guard or the New York Guard. They wouldn't do that. No, it had to be national. Why? Because they wanted to centralize these armed forces and get people away from the idea of the sovereignty of the states and local government. That's what they wanted to do. And, well, that's kind of how it came about. And we've been suffering under that system ever since. And you can see the mess we're in. Listen, if the government were afraid of people because they were armed and they had a sense of local government, I don't think we'd see what's going on right now going on. This is inexcusable. I'm appalled that folk in America are just sitting back and saying, well, you can take our freedom of association, our freedom of travel, and we'll just let you do it. We'll just let you do it on some lame ideas about a virus that nobody has seen any evidence is even real. Much more, nobody's seen any evidence that it's even comes close to being as deadly as the common flu that kills people by the few thousand every year. But yet we're just all saying, no, we're not even going to go to church. We're going to let people arrest us if we leave our homes. We're going to let people put these ankle bracelets on our legs, et cetera, et cetera. That's what's happening. What happened to the Bill of Rights? Does it exist anymore? Is there freedom of religion in America? Can you go to church if you want without being arrested? Can you speak against it if you want? Can you? Here's a big one. Check this out. Are the courts open in America? I tell you flatly, they aren't open. Well, if the common law courts aren't open, what courts are left? What courts are left? The only ones I know about that could possibly be used would be military tribunals or bureaucratic tribunals. We're in an awful mess because we're stupid and we have no resolve. We have no guts. We have no manliness. Well, what we've got, it doesn't seem to be lasting very long. Well, I'm a manly fellow. I got a gun. Yeah, but what if they come and take you away to jail? Then what are you going to do? I don't suggest you shoot anybody. Matter of fact, I don't think you ought to be doing that. No, that's not it. But are you willing to fight in the courts? That's our first line of defense. Are you willing to say, well, I'm gonna take you for a ride in court best I can? Are we ready to storm the courts and say, we've got cases to file here. They're trying to stop me from freedom of religion. When are they going to start taking guns from people? Because they're afraid, like they did down at Katrina. Well, we need to be ready to think about law. What's our first line of defense? And I keep saying this because I am in the tradition of the Declaration of 76. And I remind you, the Declaration of 76 is not a call to arms. No place in that document is there any saber rattling. Is there any express call to arms? No place. They weren't wanting to fight. They knew that a fight would occur on their own soil and it would destroy their property and their homes. They didn't want that. They wanted Britain to just leave them alone. And I say that now. What we want is for these useful idiots of the evil empire, these state governors, these local magistrates, these goofy mayors, to just back off and grow up and be adults. Whatever happened to us as American people that we're not screaming to high heaven that they're trying to stop us from exercising and enjoying our fundamental rights? That's what they, the useful idiots of the evil empire, are trying to do. That's my business whether I want to go anyplace, and my business whether I want to go to church. And God will dictate to me who I associate with, who I don't associate with at church, and the God I associate with. He dictates that. I don't do that. And the government doesn't do that. I'm under orders myself. I know I'm under orders from the maker of heaven and earth, and if law is good, I intend to follow it, and I intend to insist upon my own jurisdiction as far as the law allows me. The only remedy to the lawlessness we're seeing is true law. No, not bloodshed. That's not the remedy. As a matter of fact, if this comes to, that's what they want. Don't kid yourself. If this comes to bloodshed, they win. They win if they get us to do what they want us to do. Well, I'm just trying to bring some sense to the situation. The sense to the situation is you have a right. You have fundamental rights. Those are duties. Duties to do what? Well, just go to the First Amendment and read them. There's quite a few of them there. The right to freedom of association, the right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of the press, to say what you want to say in writing, to say what you want to say with your vocal cords, the right to petition government. Well, they say you got a right to petition government, we don't have to read it. No, that's not true either. You have a right, fundamentally, above all this, to due process. That means the courts are supposed to read what you file and answer and do something about it. Well, those are the things we're missing. Do we really know? Do we really understand? Do we have a sense of what our Maker wants us to do? That's where it has to start. It's all a matter of wisdom. What is wisdom? I'll end with this. Wisdom is not knowing a bunch of stuff. Wisdom is doing, obeying what little bit of truth you do know, or a great amount, but whatever you know. And the man that knows something and doesn't do it, the man that knows a lot and does nothing is the stupidest SOB that ever lived. SOB, son of Belial. He's stupid. He's not wise. Knowing a lot of stuff is not wisdom. Acting upon what you do know is wisdom. How do you act? You act with speech, and you act with action. We start with speech. Are we saying, I'm not any part of this? I'm saying publicly right now, I'm not a part of this madness. I'm not a part of the useful idiots of the evil empire and what they're trying to do to my fellow Americans. I don't approve of it, and I'm not going to participate. And I have to conclude what's behind all of this is the Federal Reserve Bank. I have to conclude that. I don't know who else could be doing this crazy stuff. I wouldn't let Bill Gates walk across my hog lot if I could stop him, much less get within slingshot distance of my family. And yet people are letting him tell them what to inject in their bodies? Let's stop and consider who this man is. His father was the chief abortionist in the world. His father, Bill Gates' father. Bill Gates he wanted to eradicate black babies and as many white ones as he could. Bill Gates has been spending his life recently in Africa promoting vaccines to kill as many of those people as he could. And now he's over here. He doesn't know anything about medicine, and I'm convinced he knows nothing about computers. I think his dad, who made a lot of money doing what he was doing, bought, what was the name of that thing, DOS, turned it over to him, and now he's a supposed billionaire. Have we lost our minds? Well, I'm just saying it's time we say, I'm not participating, and I don't care. I'm not participating in this madness. Gerard, back to you. Thanks a lot for letting me speak. My opinions are mine, not necessarily the opinions of those at National Liberty Alliance. But again, they're kind enough to let me say a few words, and I appreciate it. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, I don't know if Gerard's back yet or not. Gerard, are you here? Okay, I know he's here in the room, but... He's still muted. Okay, well, I'll take up from here then until he gets back, maybe. All right, I guess we'll go to our first caller here. Let's see. Looks like Eddie Joe. Is that our first caller? Let's try that. Go right ahead, Eddie. Eddie, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Maybe Eddie's away from his computer or phone also. We've only got a couple of people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. Got a question or a comment or anything you want to share, star 6. Last call for Eddie. Eddie Joe? All right, we'll take our next caller. Let's go to David from North Carolina, it looks like.
Yeah, I was wondering if we've got the package together to study it and go and sit down with our local sheriffs.
No, that's not ready yet. I do have a lot of stuff together for that, but I haven't really put it all together, so it shouldn't take me long to put it together. But we've got a lot of other things to do to really form liberty groups in the counties and get them started and get them communicating, get some membership. And my thinking is once you have four people, that's when you should set your first meeting. And once you have, maybe a dozen people, you know, people will have to make that decision on their own, but maybe a dozen or 10 people, that's the point in time when you want to maybe approach the sheriff. But first you have to organize. You have to have a plan. You have to have something that he or she can buy into, something that they can appreciate. And so we got to lay all that out. We've got to structure the group and get the educational processes going there on the grassroots level and get some growth. And then it's time to go meet the sheriff. So, but I'll by the time that comes about, I'll definitely have that together. We'll probably do a video on the sheriff first so that when you're ready, when the group is ready to meet the sheriff, you know, that you'll discuss it at a particular meeting and maybe play the video PowerPoint and then have a discussion and then make a plan for someone to call the sheriff and get an appointment and work things out. But you have to go with an agenda. It's got to be a proper, lawful agenda something that makes sense to the sheriff that he's going to buy in or she's going to buy into it relatively quickly. Now, even if the sheriff kind of doesn't want to connect with you, that's okay. Because a couple, well, it's doubtful that that will be the case, though, because they're looking for constituents. They talk to groups of people. They like groups to talk to groups to get their vote because they want to become the sheriff again. but that's okay. You know, if it doesn't work out in the first time around, because eventually that grassroots, we're building the grassroots of power and authority. They need to get that power. They need to pick up that authority. And they need to take control of the political process in their county. They need to take control of the judicial process in their county. You see, and once they do that, now you don't have to ask the sheriff to come anymore. You tell him to come, and he comes. And who would do that? Well, you know, either the jury administrators, who he will know or she will know, because they'll be in the court system, and of course the sheriff is in and out of the courts, and in most places, you know, the sheriffs run the security in the courts. So all their deputies are in there already anyway. So once they realize who that person is and connected to the group and how things work out, they definitely could have a good conversation to that, and they will respond. The other side of the coin is the political power. You know, when the chairman of the county makes the call to the sheriff, hey, we want to meet with you. We have a meeting going on at 7 o'clock this Tuesday. We really expect you to be there because we have a lot to talk to you about. How's your calendar look for that? Of course, you want to give the sheriff plenty of time. You want to give them, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. You know, give them, if you decide 1 week you're going to make the contact with the sheriff, then that week you should make contact with the sheriff for the next meeting, which should then be 3 to 4 weeks away anyway. So that's how it's got to work. That's the best way to work. If you meet with the sheriff too prematurely, and you don't have a good plan or structure to what you're going to talk about, and if you're not structured properly that he feels comfortable with, you know, because you got to be lawful, and if he thinks you know, he may have some idea of who you are as a group and might not want to connect if he doesn't understand. But again, done appropriately, you should work out well.
Sounds good. I'll be back Monday night to find out what kind of progress we're making on the sheriff's package, and I'll let you know how many people we've got in our meetings.
All right. Well, look at you know, you want to try to get the meetings going properly. We're setting up. You know, the first meeting should be an introduction to our plan, okay? And in that, introducing people to the plan introduces them to National Liberty Alliance. But
exactly.
It does make it clear and that's already done. It should be posted up probably. I'll try to get it up on YouTube this week and get it posted on our website, and it'll be downloadable. But in that introduction, we make it absolutely crystal clear. I believe we do, and I'll double-check to make sure it's clear enough, that National Liberty Alliance has no intentions or any desire to control any grassroots operation. This is not a top-down organization. Really, we're kind of top-down to push the people, to encourage them, to stimulate them to do something, to get educated, and to learn these things and do these things, but that's about it. Once they got the education and they got the understanding and the plan and they're on board with it, now that's up to them to execute it, and we have no say on how or what they do at that point. But we do have a uniform. We have a uniform plan. You know, there's a uniform procedures and processes for the militia. We're setting that up, and also for the committee men, and also for the Liberty Group that is you know, hosting the meetings for this purpose, and everybody is in that meeting is participating in some one way or another, even if it's just participating in you know, supporting the meetings and the idea and the groups and the people and so on. But this is you know, all grassroots, but we've got to move it. You know, I don't know that you can get a meeting going very quickly. I mean, I'm thinking, look, I'm going to make some phone calls probably this week or next week and get some conversations with some people, have some coffee with a few people maybe, and then after that, then make the phone calls for the big meeting, because I'll pull together three or four people pretty quickly, I think, and then I'll pull together a meeting, and that'll be probably 3 weeks at least down the line from the time I meet with a couple of people in a week or two. And so it'll probably take about a month. And that'll give us plenty of time to get out of this emergency situation we're in, because I think it's going to be settled in the next week or two. Because there's a lot more going on than we realize. And a matter of fact, I mentioned this earlier tonight, that the president had mentioned, I think he said 8, but he might have said 10, that there are different drugs that they already have and that's being tested that's getting really great results. And we know 2 or 3 of them already, and we know that they already have great results on that. But he's talking about 8 or more. And also they're very close to some other, what do they call it, the, like you get your flu shot. What do they call that, inoculation, whatever they call
vaccine
it.
Vaccine.
The vaccine. I don't know that I sign up for that one. Again, hopefully things are going to change. And we need to deal with the FDA and all of these other agencies, these federal agencies that are just doing crazy stuff and stop all of this stuff. So, but, vaccines, I remember when I was younger, they had the measles and the German measles, and they had a few other things, and they were doing vaccinations for that, polio, but I never heard of anything for the flu, the vaccination for the flu. And I suspect, I don't have the knowledge of this, but I just suspect that the flu is something that just came around once in a while, not necessarily every year. I kind of start to think that they really are putting that flu out there every year and pushing it forward so that they can sell their, their inoculations. They may push 2 or 3 or 4 different things and hoping that one of them is going to catch. And that's why they create these, these flu shots that could, they try to project what flu it might be that is coming. So I think there's this a game going on there. And we need to get to the bottom of that, of course, once we get to the other side of things.
I agree. We need to get some straight answers from them.
Yeah, nobody knows what the true reality is. I mean, we're all guessing in reality. We none of us really, we share a basic reality in here in life to begin with. I mean, a tree is a tree and a mountain is a mountain. And you communicate with people, but reality is the way one perceives it. And even though people are communicating, they have different perspectives and perceptions of things. When it comes to our government, we should understand collectively, we should all know and understand what's going on there and what the reality of that is. But everything's a guess because there's so much miscommunications out there, misreportings, there's so much theories and propaganda and control and who the heck knows what the truth is on that level anymore. It's so hard to figure out. But we need to really come together on it's very simple, come together on the Constitution. That's all. That's it. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. And see the structure of our government, our judicial process, and the common law and how it works. And we're all on the same page. And we need to get the, a media which gives us truth. I'm sure after this is all done and over with, the media is going to be cleaned up quite a bit. So we can have real news. Just tell us the facts. Don't tell us what to think. Don't tell us what you want to tell us to do to make us think a certain way. Don't corral us around like cattle or something. Just tell us the truth. And give us the 2 or 3 or 4 sides of the story if there is. Just tell it to us and leave us be. If you want to do comments,
It doesn't look like they're capable of talking straight.
Well, not now, but on the other side of things, I think they will. I think it'll, a lot of new players, of course. But we need to know what the truth is. And if people are going to be a commentary on something, And stop, don't tell us you're a news reporter. Don't report the news to us. Give us your comments, and that's fine. Make it clear this is a commentary, and then this is the news. But it seems that all news is nothing but commentary and propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else you got? Anything else? All right, we'll go to our next caller. Thanks a lot.
Yep. See you Monday night.
All right, Dave. Okay, we'll go to our next caller. Gerard, are you back yet? Calling Gerard. All right, I guess he's still not around. He's got his mic muted. All right, we'll take our next caller. Let's go to Greg from, Michigan?
Yeah, this is Greg. How you doing?
How you doing, Greg?
I want to know if you have heard earlier today a news report that said Trump was now considering allowing some COVID-19 patients to be put on board those couple hospital ships along each coast that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I don't recall hearing something like that. I do know that he's mentioned numerous times that the hospitals were not going to be, you know, those ships were not going to be used for anyone with this particular virus, but really for other things and everything else. That doesn't really make much sense to me, but if I think from a different way and try to interpret what you've been talking about and listening to X-22 report and where he struggles to give us what he thinks is going on and trying to pull things together for us, and you know, it makes sense from another perspective, okay? But you know, we'll see what happens. I don't know, but no, I haven't heard that.
Well, I mean, from what I've been told, supposedly those ships are actually positioned there to later ferry people arrested from each coast down to Cuba. Is that correct?
Say that again, something about going to Cuba, what?
I have been told from somebody who's listened to a lot of X-22 reports that the actual purpose of those couple of hospital ships is to ferry arrestees from each coast when Trump and the White Hats do their cleanup here, which we're all waiting for, they're to be loaded on those couple ships and ferried down to Cuba, to Guantanamo, for incarceration. Is that
a story that seems to maybe have merit. Again, we're not going to know until it unfolds, particularly, you know, there's misinformation out there, disinformation. Sometimes things are being said, even put out by military intelligence, with misinformation to be put out. The news media is all over the place. They're used to carrying fake news anyway. They have no clue on what's going on anyway. But yeah, I have heard these things. The other thing is they're setting up these MASH-type units all over the country. What's that all about? Why are they doing that? President is talking about mass deaths coming up, and we're going to have to get through that time. What's that all about? Of course, people are thinking this is all about the flu, but I'm not really buying that at this point. Unless maybe he's preparing the nation, using this as an opportunity to prepare us for something else, some other bio thing coming on, of a bioweapon, and so that there's great treatment for that. Or perhaps, there's a lot of underground tunnels and cities. I'm sure. I think I heard as many as 10 cities have been built underground throughout the United States. I understand that they have a tunnel that you can travel from the West Coast to the East Coast in like an hour through these tunnels. I've heard that, and who knows how true all of this stuff is. We do know the tunnels exist.
You have been sleeping, honey.
I'm just listening.
Huh?
I got you in my headset.
Hey, you're coming through live here, whoever's talking.
You're sleeping, my dear.
No, no, no.
What do you mean? No.
Are you hearing what I'm hearing, John? I'm sorry.
I just muted them.
Yeah, but you're...
Well, they just unmuted themselves. I'm muting them again. Well, I don't know. What were you saying, Greg?
I'm wondering about, you know, I mean, I've been looking at a lot of these videos people are sending me on YouTube, and I saw a very elaborate one regarding the tunnels you were talking about.
Right, I saw that too, and I don't necessarily believe that that's true.
The one that the general narrated, he gave the coordinates, the latitude and longitude of each facility.
I understand what you're saying. That's the same one I saw.
There's a
few other things that attach to that. I know what you're talking about. He seems to have a lot of details talking about certain places being taken over by the White Hats. Well, look, if all that was happening... And all of these things set across the nation were set up for the purpose of dealing with that kind of a thing, you know, a war ultimately on our shore. I think they'd be using those facilities, and we're not seeing anything like that yet. Not to say that it's not happening. Maybe it's happening, and they're doing a real good job of keeping it out of any kind of news or any place taking pictures. So I don't know. But here's the thing. Here's the problem. When I first heard that, I was fascinated by it. But then I went and re-listened again. And also X-22 reported on that kind of thinking. And he said, look, we have no information from Q that we're getting that kind of stuff is going on right now. But he doesn't know either. And that was Dave from the X-22. The other thing here is this. When I was listening the second time around to that guy's voice, he sounded like the very same guy. The voice was—I thought it was identical—to a guy who talked about Planet Nine, and that it was coming in. It was really a group of planets with a sun, and you know, it's was called, what do they call it, a brown dwarf or something. It's a star. It's about 10 times the mass of Earth. And around it has these planets, and they're going to come into intersect.
They were talking about that like last summer and last fall.
Yeah, they've been talking about that actually for about 6 or 8 years, and it was supposed to come to fruition really last year. And now I don't deny that possibility at all, and it may very well have come through, and just was not close enough to affect the planets, our planets. And so, you know, maybe a lot of stress on our planets and different things. That's why we're going through all these earthquakes and a lot of other stuff. Who knows? I don't know. But, you know, so maybe it has some truth to it, but it didn't come here. But the voice on that, where the guy spoke on that thing, sounded like the very same voice of this other guy talking on this other thing. But, again.
Yeah, the planet was Nibiru or something like that.
Right.
Nibiru, like that.
Yeah. But in any event, the point is I don't know. I can't say one way or the other. The other thing is when I didn't look at the timestamp, and I looked at it later on, and that was done like 3-4 days ago. And by now, I think we would have known these things. But who knows? I don't know. So we got to be careful what we run with. That's all I'm saying.
Well, try to figure out what's really true and what is not. Do you think that we actually have something like 10,000 troops over there helping with some cleanup of these deep state people in Europe going on now?
Absolutely. I believe that that's been happening for quite some time. Maybe not 10,000, maybe now 10,000. I heard that there was a movement of troops of about 10,000 helping and dealing with deep states and other countries. But, you know, I've been hearing quite a bit over the past, I don't know, 2 years of the Marines going to do this or that, you know. But who knows how true all that stuff is. And again, you know, there's misinformation, there's disinformation, there's people who jump on the bandwagon and they kind of run with crazy things. And so you can't figure it out. All we know is one thing. There's some big stuff going on. There's no doubt about that. There's so much confusion and so much BS out there, you know, You know, these hospitals down in New York City, they don't seem to be packed with the way they're talking about it.
Well, so, and not that I've seen in the suburbs around Detroit, and I live quite close to Detroit, which I'm sure you know is supposed to be very bad with the coronavirus, too. It's like the third worst. I guess it's right behind New York, right, where you're mm-hmm. at. And I don't know anybody who's been to hospitals downtown in Detroit, but I know I've looked at a couple in the suburbs near me, not far outside of Detroit, and then another friend has looked at a couple in his area in suburbs to the north of Detroit, where I'm to the west of Detroit, and we've both observed the same thing. They've got these coronavirus testing tents set up out in the parking lot, and these nurses out there in their full protective gear and the orange cones and barriers set up to guide the cars through, and there's really nobody at them. There's nobody there getting tested. I saw at the first hospital we went to, I saw one car with two women in it getting tested, and then one car behind them with just a single woman in the car. So two cars with a total of three people, that was it. The second hospital I went to, these nurses looked like they must be terribly bored, and they were just standing around there doing nothing. There was nobody around them at all at their station. And I've heard that from other people at other hospitals around outside of Detroit. Now, I don't know what it may be like in the inner city, if it's much different, but it's surprising that they're not busier in the suburban hospitals right around Detroit. And I've heard from a few people that they are not. And now I'm getting this email from somebody that says a FEMA insider is saying that there may be a, quote, hard lockdown across the country as early as next Sunday. No leaving homes even for food. And
I look at a couple of things. First of all, the president keeps talking about things getting better by Easter. And now he's saying, well, it could go a little longer. I don't think it's going to go much longer than Easter. It can't afford to. I think, again, the virus story is all about a cover-up. I'm sure the virus is real. I believe it's a bioweapon. I believe they got the cures and everything for it. I believe they are dragging their feet a little bit because they do have to do a certain amount of testing before they totally release it. And they're working on quite a few. So I kind of believe all that. That it's not as bad. Okay, that's the point I'm thinking. It's not as bad as they're saying. The numbers are not there anyway. But what are these mass units set up for across the United States? Why has the National Guard been put onto alert? Why has so many different military movements taken place going down into the Southern Hemisphere and also going out towards, I guess, over the Middle East in that area? So what's really going on? We do know that there are, and Trump has said it also, that he never realized the deep state is as deep and big as it is, you know. So it's huge. There's a lot of people involved in this. So it's going to take a mass of a mass movement to really hit this hard and take it out real quick. And if there are, you know, I've heard there is as many, maybe someone can correct me on this, but I've heard that there is as many as 10 underground cities in the United States. And I heard that there are tunnels connecting them all. And if that is the case, who's really controlling those cities? You know, who's really controlling all of that, you know, that network of tunneling and everything? And so that's the big question. Is that the deep state controlling all that? I suspect it is, because that's what they're all about.
Well, that video we both watched said it clearly was, and that they've got children locked up down there and doing satanic rituals down in these things and all that stuff.
Right, so if that, and you know that there is a slave trade network going on, the human trafficking, and that's where they would move them around pretty safely. You look at under New York City, you can go almost anywhere in New York City underground. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff under there. There's like a city under the city there. And that's true in many, many places, many, many cities. So you know, you got all that underground network, and if all this evil is going on, which I do believe is going on and happening, that's the place where that they would move them, maybe if they wanted to move them to a different area or into the West Coast, the East Coast, or whatever it is they wanted to do. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. And I think that was suggested. I forget where I heard it, but that's what I'm thinking. You know, all these MASH units are set up and these ships are set up is because once they get down there and they get battle, it's going to get pretty bloody and there's going to be a lot of wounded and there's going to be a lot of people that... you know, are going to be, you know, in total shock from their problems of being abused to begin with and being, you know, brought back into society. There's going to be a lot of need for a lot of medical people from, you know, all levels, psychological and medical and so on. So, but who knows? You know, again, I think the next few days we're going to see what's going on. The next few days to a week we're going to understand what's really happening.
Right now, I think in the next 1 to 2 weeks, we're going to learn a lot.
Yeah. So until then, it's guessing, but we know something's going on. And I trust Dave over there at X22. He's been very careful in what he's spoken about. He's been pretty solid all the way through. He's clear when he's kind of guessing a little bit. So, you know, I trust that particular news coming out of that. But with that, I need to move on to another person.
I got you. Let me just say, in my opinion, this stuff is all orchestrated by either some forces of good or some forces of evil. And I hope it's the good, and I hope and pray the good wins here. Because if not, we're in a lot more trouble than we've had thus far.
Well, I think it's clear that we're winning. I think that's very clear. The fact that Trump is still alive says it all to begin with, doesn't it?
That is kind of surprising, yeah.
Yeah, and he's done so much damage to them. I mean, he's really damaged their movement and destroyed them. They destroyed the economic plan that they got. I mean, he's destroyed so much. So we see what's going on. We do know certain things. But, again, something's going to have to wait for. But with that, I got to move to our next caller. Thanks a lot.
All right, John. Thanks. Have a good night.
You too. Okay, let's go to, before I go, Gerard, are you back yet? Calling Gerard. Gerard. I guess he's still away. Okay. Let's go to, is that Michelle? You got the mic. Is that Michelle or Michael?
It's actually Dana. I guess it's coming in under my husband's name. Okay. But this is Dana from New York, fellow New Yorker. How are you? Good evening, everybody. I'm pretty new to the NLA scene. You know, I'm just going to ask a question kind of as a newbie. I'm really hoping things are going in the right direction, and I do feel a shift. But what if, you know, Donald Trump is not the answer to what's going on here? Like, what's our backup plan here? Like, what do we do if what he's putting forth is not going to rectify? We got a pretty broken system the way I'm seeing it. And, you know, I lobbied firsthand over the last year and a half about the vaccine issue. So I've seen the corruption, like, firsthand. I mean, just really dirty dealings going down. I checked money trails. And things are just really corrupt in New York, really waking up to the political scene and everything this year, and now starting to see it through the lens of NLA and studying common law and starting to get into that whole thing. And I just wonder, like, what's our backup here? Because it seems like if you really truly look at the Constitution and what we're trying to learn here, it just occurs to me, and again, I'm a newbie, and I'm just looking at this as a person just coming into it, but...
How long are you aware of the problems, though? How long
honestly,
are you aware
like,
of the conspiracies, not the conspiracy theories, but the actual conspiracies? How long are you aware of what took place in 9/11? Is this and what actually is going on behind the scenes and the fact that our presidents really have been frontmen for the oligarchy for quite some time now, and that the coup that took place was back in 1963 when they shot Kennedy, and ever since then, they've seized control of everything, and that's when they seized control of the White House. Johnson, they had control all the way through. Even Reagan, his reins were held back also. But how long are you aware of that kind of thing?
like I said, I'm just getting into this now. But
you're new to it all? Okay, well, all I can tell you is this. I've been involved in the movement since about 1999. And so it's been going on for a while. I was connected. I joined up with We the People by Robert Schultz, and he was going through the courts and dealing with the problems with the IRS and with the government and the right of the people to redress the grievances. He realized there's problems in the courts. And so I had that was the first Liberty group that I had joined up with and participated with as much as I could. And and as time went on, you know, my eyes became open more and more. But a lot of people, of course, the 9/11, it didn't ring a bell right away. It kind of didn't. When I saw the towers fall and I saw things going, I knew something was wrong. But the horror of it, the whole thing, and the destruction and what was really, you know, kind of took over. And you didn't really think much until a little later. And then these videos come out and you start to study and see what's going on. You start to realize this whole thing, it was set up. It was an inside job. And then it goes from one thing to another to another. The point I'm trying to make is this. A lot of people are aware of this, have been preparing. I've been preparing. Preparing for food, preparing for supplies, things I need, weapons, ammunition, all that kind of stuff for potential hard times, because I believed we were probably going to go into a real hard time, and it was going to be, the government was going to come out after, you know, especially anybody in Liberty groups and suppress the people. And so there's a lot of us that were prepared that way. But right now, you know, he's got the whole nation under energized. I'm talking about Trump. I mean, you know, he goes out and he talks and he just fills stadiums and stuff. And so there's a lot of really people connected with it. I think he woke up the people, not just the people who've been woke up to see all these things. A lot of people who are waking up and they still don't even know about how evil things really are and what really is behind the scenes. But they're learning little by little. So I think the people are woken up enough to know. You know, every time they talk about gun control, especially here in New York, the gun sales go up, you know, and that's true everywhere. So that's not going to happen. So the people are still armed. A lot of people have been prepared. More people are awake. Trump has damaged these people in so many places. He's gotten rid of a lot of the big players. Things are happening. Look, one thing about Trump, I come from New York City, so I've known about Trump for many, many years, you know. And then, of course, the world learned a lot about him when he did his TV program. But he's come up and survived a lot of things. And one of the things we do know about Trump is that even though he rubs shoulders with the elite and he knows all these players and stuff, he doesn't hang out with them. That's not where, you know, what he was. He's about. He's just about business and getting things going. But you know what? Presidents, they made a big stink about him when he was running. He didn't have any experience. He wasn't in any elected office before. He shouldn't be president, all this other stuff, blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line is really we need a president that's not a politician. We need people going to Congress that are not politicians, people who go for one or two terms and go home and stop. And that's what we need. You know, back in the days in the beginning, you know, for instance, when the legislators came together, you know, they were brought together in 1 year and people were, you know, appointed for those positions or elected to those positions, shall I say. And they'd go fill those positions and then come back and that would be it. And then they might be sent back again. But we created terms and no one should do anything more than 2 terms and no one should be a career politician. And we just need regular people. It's so clear how much we needed a businessman who understood the economics of the world and understood how business works. In the
so
White House,
we
should
go back
have
to
this
the
a
question.
Long time. Huh?
I'm sorry, but can we just go back to the question for a second? like, I do feel that he's woken up the people to see what's going on, but what if he's not, you know, like, what if he's not able to do all the things that we're expecting? What is our next plan of action?
Well, okay, you know,
like
you know then it brings us back to the Second Amendment. But I do not think in any way, shape, or form it's going back to the Second Amendment. He is so confident and so obvious in his positions and thinking. I mean, he is so sure. And you could see he's just successful constantly over and over and over again. You know, he turns everything around back on these people. He's the master of this. I don't know if there's another person that could have done what he done. I mean, he's just a perfect person. As a matter of fact, you know, I was just, when he became elected president, of course, when he was running, I already knew about him, a lot about him, and I definitely wanted him to get in office. I didn't realize he knew as much as he did, but I should have known that, because he rubs shoulders with people all over the world, so he knows a lot of what's going on, probably a lot more than we do. But, you know, look at, he's not in for the money, that's clear. He's been very successful. He's being successful in what he's doing. He's successful on bringing business back. He's successful getting these deals going, making peace with Korea. You know, no matter what you're hearing in the news, there's peace going on with him in Russia and him in China. It's the deep state in China that's the problem. It's not China, the actual government. They're trying, not that they're any good either, but who knows where they're going to go, but they're certainly not the deep state. And they have a problem there. Russia, I'm not sure. I know they had a problem with the deep state, I'm sure, too. I don't know what the status is on that. But, you know, I think there's a lot of positive things going on. And for me, biblically, I look at, you know, Isaiah 14, and I try to keep away my thinking when I read my Bible of applying it to political things or worldly things, because so many people have put that together, and they were just so wrong. And I hear a lot of that going on now, and they're still so wrong. But there is something in Isaiah 14 that kind of clarifies it for me, that this is the way God planned it to happen at the end here, that things were going to be taken back and nations were going to be judged and so on and so forth. So we'll see what happens, you know. But it looks good from my perspective, it does anyway. I feel confident. But again, if then it's up to you and me if it doesn't work. The question is, are you and me going to step up and do something about it? That's the question.
Well, I think we have a really good network, actually, through the vaccination movement in the state. Like, we have a lot of counties that are covered by that. So I think if we get enough folks actually in New York engaged in this process, it can be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. And that's working with what? Are you involved with the things going on with the pharmaceuticals and stuff?
Yeah, I've been very heavily involved over the last year and a half, 2 years, in the process of lobbying and fighting this issue. Mm-hmm. And it just goes so many levels deeper than we could even really get to in like,
so if we can get the network, if we can get the network, those people in that network pulled in, that's pretty, you know, and we see other networks like that, then, mm-hmm. you know, empower them on the grassroots to take on the power, the authority, the knowledge that we're trying to give in order to take back this nation. We got to get people from all over the place. We got to pull them in and make them aware of what we're doing.
I agree. I know Gary talks about all the time how we have a big base, but we don't have as many active members as we'd like. And I'm telling you, the folks in this movement are activated. These are people that act, that get on things, and they do. We don't sue. That's why I'm here. We're in blackout times, but I'm like, you know what? I want to get my knowledge on in this area. I want to, you know, round out my knowledge and do something else, because we've been doing so far isn't working. So, mm-hmm.
Well,
the key thing
is to get them to National Liberty Alliance. See National Liberty mm-hmm. Alliance's plan. We'll have the videos up hopefully this week. We're going to have an introduction to. Really, it's really a plan to really empower the grassroots, but it's a National Liberty Alliance plan, and you know, we have the educational setup here, process set up here for, you know, civics, constitutional, you know, as far as government by consent, and civics and the militia, and so, you know, if they read our plan and watch the video of our plan and start looking at the education that we're offering and everything else we're doing, come to our Monday night meetings, ask questions, participate, and then use all of this information that you can get from us and bring it right home to the county level and get started, and then work with your sister county and so on and so on and so on. And that's how we'll be successful.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, and you said your name was Dana, right?
Correct.
Okay, Dana. Nice talking with you.
Yeah, same with you, John.
All right. Okay, let's take our next caller, Jim from PA. You got the mic.
Hey, this is Jim in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Okay, I have a question, but I want to first say that I'm having a lot of difficulty getting individuals to even go to the NLA website or to, even understand the full goal or concept of NLA.
Okay. Now, are you having problems getting to our site, you're saying?
No, just
okay,
having
well,
people go to it.
Well, the key thing is this. Look, it could be overwhelming sometimes, but again, everyone working together, we can accomplish our goal. But right on our front page, okay, we have the NLA plan. One of the very first thing you see on our front page is NLA plan. And I tell people when they go to National Liberty Alliance, look, when you go to National Liberty Alliance, first thing you want to do is read the plan. That's 24 pages. And we will have a video up on this soon. We may even put it on our front page. Who knows? But read the plan on the front page, and then read the entire front page. Watch the videos on the front page. And now when you come to the end of all that, then at that point you'll have more than enough information you need to make a decision on whether you want to participate with us and understand who we are and what we're doing. And so that's the key, you know. After that, it's a matter of connecting on a Monday night program. It's getting into the courses, participating with a committee, maybe volunteer your time to be a district leader or to work with one of the other committees. We have the welcoming committee. We've got a few other committees. Working on your state level to try to organize the counties in your state, or just work on your county, you know. Educate yourself, learn, bring it down to your county, get people together in your county, get them together, show them the things that you're learning, and get it going. Again, it's all about empowering, and knowledge is power, and if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. That's what Thomas Jefferson said. And so we have to have an education. People don't know what their heritage is. If you don't know the difference between law and equity and civil law, then you don't have a clue on what's going on in this government. You don't have a clue of the problems that we have. And you know what? That is the case with almost everybody, including people in office, okay? And that's pretty sad. Now, they have worked overtime to make sure that the American people are ignorant, that they're not educated into who they are as a people, their heritage, where we came from, and what true liberty really is. I mean, they've licensed a lot of our rights. We have a license to do this and a license to do that. We're free people. We need licenses for nothing. They've created a statutory prison that we live in. You can't even drive down the road without maybe being pulled over and given tickets and stuff and going through this and paying that. These things go on and on and on and on. You have to get a license to have a weapon, you know, and if you use it here, you know, you might go to jail, you know. I mean, all kinds of situations that they've created. People don't know what liberty is. They really don't know. They think they know. They think they know. But they don't. They don't really know. They don't understand that they're in statutory prisons, that there is no justice in the courts, that the Constitution doesn't stand in the court. It's null and void. It's been abrogated as far as all of the judges, county, state, federal. They all believe, they're true believers, that we are under civil law. Common law has been abrogated, and somehow that could happen. Okay? Federal district judges and the United States Supreme Court knows that shouldn't happen. But they're playing along. They're in the game. They're maintaining status quo. You're going to lose every time. Look at all the cases. We have been in court for, goodness, years now. We've been in hundreds of cases. We get a win here and there, but the wins usually here or there is they get a little frightened and they shut the case down and they let everybody go. But that's rare. That's extremely rare. The fact that non-judicial foreclosures, I think we have over 60 of them, 60 non-judicial foreclosures we've brought to the federal courts we brought to the court. Well, actually, we brought to the courts, and we explained to them the law. We moved it into the federal court, and they've ignored it. They were silent, and they still take away people's homes. A non-judicial foreclosure. That's non-due process. They took your home without due process. And habeas corpus, dead. Dead as a doornail. There is no habeas corpus in America. Again, we've had two successes in habeas corpuses, and we've got, what, 30, 40 habeas corpuses that we put through? They've been ignored, removed, concealed, mutilated, destroyed, and it just goes on. No, we're indicting. We've indicted lots. We've indicted lots of federal judges. We've indicted lots of state judges on the county level, state level, lots of them. We've filed those indictments with the Justice Department and the Attorney General Barr. We've filed them up in the Northern District of New York. We're not expecting anything to be done right now because there's too much corruption. Get to the other side of what's happening right now. When we get to the other side, the void, the power void is open. We need to be ready to go in and take that power on the grassroots level. And if we don't, woe is us.
Okay, John, my question specifically is, at what capacity could a 50-year-old man that is, what capacity could he participate in NLA's goals if he's still under the guardianship of his father? And another gentleman that doesn't work and is on the system for the past 10 years, they have time to participate and they seem to understand the goals of NLA. But if an individual is under the guard, he's 50 years old and under the guardianship of his father, and the other one, you know, is on the dole, on the system, I just wonder how they
could
benefit.
Well, I don't think it sounds like they may not be stable enough to participate in a big way. I mean, look, they can participate any way they want, but it sounds like they've got some things holding them back, that they've got some issues they haven't been able to deal with in their life or something. I don't know. But, you know, most people are not under those kind of situations. So if someone is under the guardianship of someone else, the question is why? And if they don't want to be under the guardianship, do they have the ability to remove themselves from that? And if they can, then that's the first big step. So, but if they're under someone else's wings and control, and that person doesn't want the 50-year-old son or whatever to participate in something, and they got that kind of control over them, and I think that's what you're saying, and there's nothing, what can you do?
These are the individuals that understand the goals of NLA. The other ones can't get involved. They don't even have the time. They don't want to go that their goals in the liberty and constitutional movement.
Yeah, but again, you know, there's lots of people that can participate. That's the people who have to respond. You know, we're not going to get everyone involved. I'm pretty sure it was Jefferson. I know I wasn't sure before, but I saw this quote recently, and I'm pretty sure it was Jefferson I saw, who said that we don't have government by majority. We have government by majority that participates. The government they don't need millions of people to make this work the way they're making it work as far as stealing our government from us. We, the same way, we don't need millions of people either. We can take this entire nation back very, very, very comfortably with about 40 or 50,000 people. And so we've got, what, 350 million people in the United States. So we can even do it in less than that. I mean, that would be very comfortable to get 40 or 50,000. We could do it with 20,000 or even 15,000. We can do it. But that's the key, is to try to get 15 to 20,000 people who are willing to really step up and take this nation back. And that's where it begins, because after that, you know, once we have that structure around America in all the counties, you know, we'll be recruiting people all day long, filling these positions. And after a couple of years, we will be able to fill all the necessary positions, the committeeman positions, all of the administrative positions in the courts and being operating under the law again, getting rid of the civil law, and making things work. Again, you know, everybody could do whatever they can do, whatever capacity they can do it at, and that's that. Some people can give a lot more than others, and some people can give only a little bit too. So somebody can maybe give an hour a week. Others can give 10 hours a week. Others can be full-time all week long, every week. So whatever your capacity is what you should put forward. Some people can give $5 a month. Some people can give $50 a month. Whatever your capacity is to push this program forward, you do it. So anyway, we got to move to our next caller. Appreciate the call. Let's see who's next here. Let's go to Eddie again. Eddie, you got the mic. We tried getting you a little earlier, but I guess you were away. Eddie Joe? Eddie Joe. Do we have the wrong name? Well, what I'm going to do is mute you and unmute you. You should be able to. Well, no, I'm going to kick you out if I mute you. Well, I'll try because you're not responding. Eddie, you there? Okay, maybe by muting and unmuting, you'll know I'm talking to you. That's a mute. And that's unmuted. Eddie. All right. We'll move to the next caller. Dan from Carolinas. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Dan.
Greetings, everyone. I would like everybody to know that just recently, this past week, I contacted Washington, D.C., and spoke to as many of our governing officials, if you would refer to them as that, like the Senate and the House of Representatives. And, of course, I didn't get to speak personally more. It was like staff. However, I got a response back that came April the 6th from Washington, D.C., and the what I was bringing to their attention is due to the situation that is bad economics and because of this corona virus and what's going on with our nation and those people suffering, families and businesses and just all of us as a whole here in this nation. I stated that there's merit for us to do a moratorium on ad valorem taxes, and that I really can say technically I would be all in favor of carrying it a lot further than that once we got it started. To be, you know, for this nation in way of, well, I mentioned a flat tax, and then we also made a discussion on a fair tax. And I can read you what it's about a paragraph response here, or Mr. John.
Well, I'm familiar with the flat tax idea. And I, you know, to somewhat, I think, with the fair tax, you know, I guess that could mean lots of things. But the flat tax I'm very familiar with. I've met and spoke with people who are pushing and teaching that. But that certainly is not the solution because that tax is an unlawful tax. You cannot, there's no such thing as a flat tax. There are lawful taxes, and the government gets money from many, many places. All the money that the IRS pulls in, okay, you know, most of that is almost all profit for them. I mean, they're charging us a fortune just to print our money and destroying us and over-inflating our money and just leveraging it and playing all these crazy games with it, the economy. But it's unlawful. It's unconstitutional. It's a slave tax. You can't tax an individual's labor. You can't tax his home. You can't tax whatever he owns. Because they don't own it if you tax it. And if you tax a person's sweat, then he's your slave. So that's not possible. You know, there is a, I forget what they call it, the tax where it's a head tax, you know, for each individual. But, you know, if they did a tax like that, let's say they wanted to collect a tax of $20 for every person in the state. Well, they still can't tax it direct. It's got to go to the state. The state's got to find a way to earn the money to bring that up, which would equal X amount of dollars for each head sent to the federal government, because that is lawful. It's a way the government can make some income. But look, there's so many other things going on, and a lot of the money they don't need, because it's really wasted and it's put in people's pockets, and we have so many people working for government that we don't need. Government is too big. I mean, if they operated lawfully, everything would be fine, but they're not operating lawfully. But a fair tax, or a what was the other one called? What you had said. What was the other one you were calling?
The flat tax.
The flat tax. It's unlawful. Unlawful. It's unconstitutional. Can't do it. No need for it either.
You'd be interested to see what the first line stated. It's completely reverse of what you are telling us in all justice of what you just spoke about. In other words, the first sentence says, I traditionally, I'm not going to quote who this individual is, but I can tell you it's from the House of Representatives, Congress of the United States. I traditionally have always been a public supporter of the flat tax, which I believe to be much safer and more politically achievable objective than the fair tax.
Who's stating this? Yeah.
Okay, well, you've asked me, so I mean, I can't. This is David Rouser. He's the 7th District of North Carolina.
Okay, well, look, he doesn't know the Constitution, obviously.
Apparently not. And yeah, that is one of the reasons why I wanted you to expound on this and for others to hear this. It's what you've been telling us for, gosh, I don't know, from day one, that these people absolutely do not know the Constitution.
They don't. You know, Donald Trump, his plan, and he's going to succeed at this, and I think he's going to succeed before this year is out. He's getting rid of income tax. He's getting rid of the Fed. The whole thing is exploding. It's going to just collapse. And then with the, you know, all of this debt, he's going to tell them to, you know, take a hike. It's not, look, we're not going to take care of your debt. You're a bank. You know, we have nothing to do. You've been ripping us off. You've been a fraud. We're not going to give the criminal, pay the criminal some money that they think we owe them. No, you owe us. That's why people, a lot of people don't realize. This is why they're saying that he's putting us more in debt than anyone else. He spent all this money to get the military back up and going, you know, resupply the shelves, so to speak, the ammo. And he wants to, you know, rebuild America, get our roads going back on. He's building a wall. I mean, he's spending money like crazy. Okay, look what he's doing right now. He's giving money to all the people, you know, $1,200 a person. And he's doing these loans and stuff for small businesses to keep them afloat and keep them going. And you're going to see he's going to turn around and get rid of the tax, and people are going to become used to that, and then they're not going to want to go back to that. And meanwhile, the whole system's going to collapse as he's building another economic system as we speak, and has been doing so for 3 years. He's been building an economic system alongside this economic system in order to support and make a soft transition. It's going to be a rocky road, but it's not going to be a total collapse. We're not going to fall into a Great Depression. Again, I have a lot of trust in this guy, as I've been watching him over the years and even before he was president. I have a lot of trust in his abilities and what he's doing, and he's very confident. And he just takes it on and keeps on going, you know. So I think we're going to be in good shape. I think by the end of this year, before this summer hits midsummer, we're going to be in great, great shape as a nation. I do believe that. So anyway,
well,
we got one other call on the line. Yeah, or two, actually.
Just a quick synopsis here of what he did say is, He says, I realize the alleged slave language in the bill, apparently this is a bill, I wanted you to hear this before we got gone, require that the income tax be abolished before a consumption tax would be put in place. But there is no certainty that such a requirement would find its way into the final version of a bill, especially considering the budget pressures Congress face. He mentioned about the $18 trillion and such and such, but you can rest assured, if we had a fair tax, then these people that are in certain positions and don't pay any tax hardly compared. And Warren Buffett says this vividly all the time of his situation, is that he pays less tax than maybe his secretary or someone in his works inside of his business or something. And he, just well, that alone. Go ahead.
Well, all of this stuff is just, they're all confused to begin with, and after a while they confuse me. And it's a very simple thing. It really, the answer and the solution to all our problems, all of our problems, is so simple. It just brings us right back to the Constitution. Let's take that Constitution and actually use it. Let's enforce the law of the land and require only that which is lawful to be applied, and not allow that which is unlawful to be applied, and we will be great. Everything would work out fine. Now, the other thing is we have to get rid of, look, George Washington said the destruction of this nation would be by the parties. And Thomas Jefferson said the destruction of this nation will be by the judiciary. Well, they were both right. They were both working on us. We need to take both those back. We need to get rid of parties to begin with. There's absolutely no reason for parties. That is a New World Order game. It's a Nazi game. It's just a game they play to control the people, to put one group against another group, get them fighting while they're stealing them blind. But all this arguments and all of this bickering in parties, look what it does. You got one woman in Congress controlling the whole Congress. One person, okay? You get these committees and one person on a committee. You get these leaders, and they don't allow things to come to the floor. They don't allow other ideas. They squash things. They refuse to allow things to come to be debated. And who gave them all these? This is all politics. And you got all of the Democrats against all of the Republicans. It's all politics. It's political. It's destruction to the political process is what it is. But there's no need for any of that. Okay. And it's all about money. It's all about special interest groups. And, you know, we elect them and hire them to go to Washington or to go to our capital or whatever, and state capital, and to represent us. And what do? They go to take all this funny money, and they represent the special interest groups. The lawyers, one of the biggest special interest groups in the nation, gives over $43 million just in the last election period. And they control everything. They control our courts. They control the political process. They control both parties. They control it all. And everybody believes what they say. And it's all municipality law. It's civil law. It's to control the people. And they don't even know it. We don't. Why? Because you got to keep the slaves ignorant. You can't let the slaves come to this knowledge. You can't, because the slaves will rebel when they realize that they're actually slaves and there's a way out of this whole thing. So we got to get, look, just, we don't need politics. We don't need all this argument about abortion and this and that. We don't need that. Just apply the Constitution. Abortion has no right in the United States Supreme Court. They had no power, no authority to step on the foot of God and to take God's domain and say murder is lawful and to do it. Now, you look at this, belongs back to the people. It belongs in courts of law. That's where it used to be. It's not there no more. They just play politics with it. It's all a game to keep us busy, to lead us over here and lead us over there, to put one against the other, black against white, Christian against the Jew, or whatever it is. It just divide. That's all it is. So, look at,
I know
Let's apply the Constitution. Let's require them to obey the Constitution. And the only way we could do that is if we take control of the courts and the political process through the committee man and the administration of the courts through administrators to control the juries and the grand juries and making sure that they're not polluted by all of these lawyers. Okay. Once we take those two things back and we apply the Constitution and we pull them out of office, we either recall them or indict them when they take the funny money or do the things that they break their own oaths, which they break all day long, every day, every one of them, okay? And once we apply the law on them and make them obey, politics will disappear. As a matter of fact, the two political parties, which are private associations that are not connected to truly connected to our political process in a lawful way, but once the people take that back, they cease and desist, they have to stop. They cannot continue to use the name of a Democratic or the Republican Party. They can't use those names no more. Those belong to the parties of the people in a legal, lawful sense. And so all those buildings with all those phones in them, all the people answering the phones and collecting the monies and making this move and that move and doing all this stuff, all that stops. It's just gone, okay? Once the people take back the political process, it's gone. And what, are we going to do the same thing? When we're preaching and teaching and people are understanding and coming in to take control, to apply the Constitution, and what, are they going to turn around and start playing the political game? Of course, you know, maybe one or two people here, they won't be able to do it. Party bosses will flee the moment the people move into the committeeman process as elected committeemen. They're gone. They'll leave. The people that are left are the people not sure what's going on, and they'll learn and participate and become involved, and we'll educate them and we'll teach them how to get into the process in a lawful way. And this is how we can save the nation. It's the only way. If the people don't do it, we lose.
Just 30 seconds here. According to one of our friends that were on here tonight from North Carolina, first name of David, he was telling me recently that in the Book of Kings, he studied pretty heavily Holy Scriptures. And we will leave this for another discussion because there's some other people there, I'm sure, in your queue.
Yeah, we still got another one or two people, and it's a couple minutes after midnight.
But it appears that in our Holy Scriptures, this nation is going against those Scriptures, and we need to get back to a Christian form, and that's what our common law approach is.
Common law. Common law comes from the Bible.
If you
don't want the Bible, you don't have common law. That's where it stems from. That's where it comes from. The militia comes from the Bible. You know, that's where we've learned about the militia, from the Bible. Okay? Even the way we're structured as a nation comes from the Bible. All of it. Okay? It goes back into 1600, 1500 B.C., you know, with Moses and coming out of Egypt and wandering and coming to the promised land and setting up a nation. I mean, it all stems all the way back to that. That's where it comes from.
I'll yield. Thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll take the other people. We can talk some more on this next time. Let me take some of the other people. Thanks.
Sure.
Let's go to Mark. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good to meet you all for the first time here. I used to be a lot more liberal, I'll just say that. I've always lived in northwestern area of the country, but served my country and found out about the deep state in 99 when I was in the Army for Poppy Bush. Ended up starting a few nonprofit organizations over the years and worked with a lot of rock stars and movie stars and Oprah and, you know, at one point met, you know, Bill Clinton and, you know, I work with a lot of the deep state that now I know to be the deep state, but, and thank God for Trump.
Well, amen to that.
And, you know, I guess I was purple pilled about 1999.
You know, 4 years ago, who would ever have thought that we can be where we are today and that things can change so radically and flip from one side to the other so quickly? No one saw this coming.
I certainly didn't. And, you know, I went from being one of the darlings of the Democrats to having them take my child away and my property and my money and my right to bear arms and all of it.
All they do is take things from the people.
Yeah.
You know, they're not creators, they're destroyers. And anything anybody else creates, they infiltrate like a parasite, and they take it control little by little until they take it away, and they're destructive.
Well, more recently, I decided to run for United States Senate in Arizona. And I've been running that campaign until today was the deadline for the petitions to get on the ballot.
Well, they're probably going to do something about that. They got to do something about that, I would think, because, you know, even here in New York, the tail end of it, it wasn't there. We weren't able to go file the petitions.
Myself included. But they didn't change anything. They only
shut down
all the necessary elements.
Yeah, well, that's okay, because you know what? We, the people, will do it anyway. And you know what? Look, you know, as far as from our perspective, taking back the committeeman process, which is the most important part of this whole thing, even if we don't do it this year, we'll do it next year. But we have to organize to get it done. But I do believe that once we take the courts back, the deep state is gone, the resistance has been removed, and now logical, thoughtful thinking and communications and discussion starts to take place. And the logical question is what are we going to do now about all these petitions that needed to be filed for the election and this and that and the other thing? We're going to have to come up with a solution. So, and I don't know what that solution, I do know what the solution is for the committeemen, because we can run special elections, okay, to fill these positions. But I don't know how this would work on a Senate. Well, first of all, senators shouldn't be elected, okay? They should be elected by the state, by the legislators of the state. That's how senators are to be, put into office. That's constitutional.
Anyway.
The 17th Amendment, which is null and void, it's destructive on many levels. It never really ever became law, so it was never ratified to begin with, number one. Number two, it destroys the power structure that was created, the balance of power in the federal government and on the states. You know, it destroys it does its most destruction on the balance of power between the federal government, the state, and the people. You see, that's where the balance of power is. And the people have laid up on how much power and authority they want to give to their state and to the federal government. And we did that in a constitution. We also have a state constitution. And most of the things in most state constitution is null and void because it's repugnant to the United States Constitution. So there's a lot of things that need to be corrected there. But, you know, look, at we need to really just take this whole thing back and start obeying the law. That's really the bottom line. And that's how
I'm all about that. You just said my platform right there.
Yeah. But the Senate should not be elected by the people. It destroys the whole power structure, because the plan in the balance of power on the federal level, okay, is between the three branches and the state, particularly. But of course, the people have play a role in there. But the states have no voting power separate from the people for the Senate, and that's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem, and in the meantime, you know, I think having a great awakening narrative as part of a U.S. Senate campaign would be very valuable to all, you know, the whole plan moving forward. And like you're saying, we all got to do something about it.
I don't know what they're going to do with these petitions now, because petitions are required by law in order to run an election.
and it, you know, it cannot be interrupted. You know, if people interrupted it, there's a stiff penalty there. There's a prison sentence for that.
Do you know of anybody that's filed any sort of injunction related to this?
Well, no, I don't know. I don't. First of all, you know, these are all state issues, so each state's going to deal with it, and that's going to be a nightmare on its own. But when it comes to the federal election, of course, the federal government has a lot to play in that, so you could take that into the courts. Now, has anybody filed anything on that? You know, I don't even, we don't even have a solution, so filing it at this point doesn't make sense. Making the debate and the argument is really putting our energy in the wrong place, where we need to take the energy to put in a place to take back power in the people. And so however they work that out, you know, we can fix that next year or whatever. But, the, you know, look at the bottom line. If you have a constitution that's being applied, which is the law of the land, it doesn't matter who gets into office. You can have a bunch of Hitlers in office. As long as you press them and require them to be obedient to the constitution, and they are obedient to the constitution, who cares what's really going on in their mind? They're going to do the job that they were sent there to do, or they will be removed from office by recall, or particularly most likely removed by indictment. So that's where we got to work it.
On a related note, you were talking about the judicial branch. I discovered this secret group of judges calling themselves the Superior Court Judges Association.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd set up formally and legally in, well, I don't know about legally, but they got a UBI number and all that in California. And then in Washington State, they never filed. They didn't legally form their organization, and they collected all their dues from 296 Superior Court judges. Well, illegally, they put it all in a private bank account. But anyway, just on a side note, if you find one of these in your state, then it's likely the same scam, and every judge pays dues. But me and my buddy, all of that
sounds unlawful, of course, and it needs to be done away with. The biggest organization that is the most destructive is the ABA, the American Bar Association.
Yeah.
They are the most destructive element in this nation. They have a total control over our nation politically and judicially, economically. They are the minions of the New World Order.
Yeah. Well, as a funny side note here, I went and got a business license, and I called the business Superior Court Judges Association. And wouldn't you know it, they gave me the license because the other group never filed theirs, and I sent 296 judges a cease and desist letter from using our legally obtained trade name, from lobbying against the will of the people. They're spending hundreds of thousands. Anyway, it's probably why they came after me with such full force. I really did piss them all off, but it's just something that I don't know. I liked it when I first heard about NLA. I was listening. It was in the back room of the Patriot Soapbox, and they told me all about you. And I was like, oh my God, I'm just so glad that you guys are, you know, formed. And I finally found somebody that's really got it down pat. You really know what's needed to take back, and I've been saying some of the same things I'm hearing, you know, in this call.
Right, well,
and on your website.
Get connected with us. If you have some time, you know, volunteer some time with us. Get connected and help build out what we
Absolutely.
Have to build out. We need help at every level. Every level. We need lots of help.
I'll be taking your course here in the coming week, and I'm certainly putting myself out there. It's why I wanted to be on the call. Because do have some things I need some help with, but mostly I just want to make myself available. And
Well, do you have any? It sounds like you do have background in writing papers, legal papers, no?
At one point I had 28 lawyers working for me for free.
All right, so you understand? Well, are you a lawyer,
law,
or a paralegal, or
not
anything?
Not a lawyer. I was always a producer of films and records and nonprofit fundraisers, benefit concerts, benefit albums.
Well, look at the, you know, with some of your system. Some of your legal understanding, you know, maybe we can use you because we're always, you know, we got a couple paralegals working with us now. We always need more. We need more on the legal end of things also from all kinds of levels, people with experience and understanding how things work. But we've got so many things going on, and we also, anybody who has an idea of something that might be, you know, advantageous to the movement that we're doing here and wants to suggest some kind of a new committee and something else to do, and, you know, if the leadership agrees to it and we can see some value in moving this whole process, then, of course, we'll add. Like, we've got the welcoming committee. We have the court watchers group, so we have different groups of people doing different things, and we have the leadership that's organizing. We got, organizers. We got coordinators and district leaders and so on, you know, all for the sole purpose, really, to drive everything we have down to the grassroots, to energize them, to empower them, to move them.
Definitely help with a couple of these areas. One of the groups I started was a court watchdog group, and we would pull every file, you know, all the family law cases.
All right, well, get a hold of Jan. Get a hold of Jan. Talk to him and discuss some things over. He may pass you over to some other people to talk with, and talk with Francine maybe, because, you know, she really she's our manager. She manages everything we do.
Yeah, I'll do that.
And let's see where we can use you. Let them know what experiences you have, you know?
Perfect. And that's all I got for now. But thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate you. And God
appreciate
bless
it.
You all.
Thank you.
And, I'm looking forward to getting my feet more wet into the NLA and learning more about what we're doing as a collective here, and then meeting some of you individually as well. But really looking forward to that, and can't wait to see what's going to happen. The best is yet to come.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Good call. We'll
All
talk
right.
to you another time. Thanks.
All right. Bye for
okay,
now.
Let's take our final caller, Audrey. You got the mic.
Hi. It's very Hi. Simple. I wasn't able to get on in the beginning, but I was just wondering, and you may have already addressed it, that how has, with the country being shut down, how has this impacted on any of the legal documents that the NLA submit? You know,
good question. Good question. Well, look, we've come to a point, and we believe that this is the beginning of the storm with this coronavirus thing, and all these other activities going on behind the scenes, some of which we have a little bit of an understanding of, most of it which we don't. So it's coming to a climax. I think the deep state is about to go down on hard, and so that, I think, is going to be weeks. It may be a month or two or a little more for stabilization, but I think they're going down in weeks. Perfect timing for the paper that we just wrote. You know, I saw this coming, and I knew this paper had to be written, and we wrote the paper, which we'll be reading it next Monday. We did file it today, so it's already out and going. Remember, the courts are not closed. The courts have closed hearings. That's it. The court is still open. Paper is still moving. Things are still happening inside the courts. It's just that they're not having any meetings, so they're keeping people outside and not having any hearings. That's all been just set aside for a while. And so we filed our last paper with the intention of not filing any more papers as far as writing papers and filing it, that kind of filing, until after we get to the other side and we see what the United States Supreme Court is going to do. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary is our target, because that's where the evil is from that perspective, from the judicial side of things. It's in the federal courts, and we need to take them back. And so once they don't have any more protection by the deep state, okay, then that's when we can seize power and bring it right back to the people where it belongs. But the people need to get educated. They need to get in place to take that power. They need to receive the power. You know, you can't give it to the people and no one there to receive it. Okay, so we're working on that, of course, and that's going to take some time to really get, but we can move a lot of things now. Now, as far as papers joinders, we're still doing joinders. We just filed, I think we're up to, we are up to date, I'm pretty sure. Jim sent me some decision and order papers that had to be sent out for about, I don't know, maybe 8 people. So we got 8 of them out, and then something, I got one this morning, which I was able to finish before I went to the mail. So we got about 9 of them out, and we're up to date with that. He's working on a bunch of other joinders, and we're moving through the court. So anybody who wants to join a case to us, we're still doing that. We're still filing it with the court. There is a process, and you have to go through the process, which really we start off with what's called an amicus curiae into your case, which is a friend of the court coming in to make a legal position and a point, particularly with due process that's not there. And then at that, they're going to ignore that. Maybe after a couple of weeks, they may no longer ignore that. But right now, they're ignoring it. And so then we move it into our case for cause, okay? And then they get the opportunity to respond to the show cause. And then after that, what's happening is really there's been silence, not even responding. Okay? They get defaulted. Okay. We come over with a decision and order. We file it with the courts. And we got to wait to get to the other side for justice, which I don't think the other side is too far away. So we're moving that. We're also still doing habeas corpuses, but we're not going to be able to file a habeas corpus until after the emergency is removed, the federal emergency. And once that's removed, because during that time period, there's no activity in the courts, you know, and there's no hearings or anything. So it's just put on hold. There's no way to get around that, I don't think. So. But I would think in, you know, anybody that wants to do a habeas corpus, we can get all the paperwork, get it all ready to go, and as soon as we feel that the courts have opened back up, we can file them immediately. So if you want to get the paperwork going on habeas corpus, you could do that. The joinders, you can do right now. We're filing them now. It's all paperwork. We're moving it to the court. It's all paperwork. Everything is paperwork. The only required hearing is for the habeas corpus. So we're still going forward. And we're caught up on all papers, to my knowledge. I spoke with Jim earlier, and he's got everything. I got everything he sent. It's done. Spoke with Francine. She's been handling the habeas corpuses. We're up to date with everything. We've given our decisions and orders there. And by the way, people need to understand, we are giving the United States Supreme Court decisions and orders. We are giving the federal judiciary decisions and orders. We are giving state judges and county judges, town judges, village judges, city judges, decisions and orders, okay? And it doesn't matter that they're not obeying us because they're all crooked, they're in the game, they got the guns, they got the controls. But when we get to the other side of things, the whole thing turns around. But it still requires the people to step up, press it through, to take the power and the authority. But nevertheless, our paperwork is in, the pressure on the Supreme Court is on, and we're going to have to come together soon to decide whether we are going to indict these judges, the United States Supreme Court, the 9 judges up on the top. We're going to have to indict them. We're going to indict some of them. We're going to know whether we're going to have to do that soon. And it's a hard decision in the sense that what we're doing is going to be really big, okay? You know, I prefer that when we get to the other side, that all of a sudden these judges no longer feel threatened. They no longer feel that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. We kind of understand that. And they're ready to obey the law. And they respond to us in a proper way, okay, acknowledging the people, who we are, that we are the authority, that we need to take control of the courts of law. Not a political animal, not an appointed individual, but the free and independent people need to take control of it. And as long as they're good with that, and we do that, then we don't need to indict the United States Supreme Court judge. But we have already indicted, goodness, lots of judges, lots of federal judges, and lots of state judges. We've indicted a lot. And we filed in a paper we filed, which will be posted. All those names and everything is posted up. It will be posted up on our website. So all that information will be there. Okay? Anything else?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the call. Okay, with that brings us to the end of our evening. Went over about a half hour. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. We have a special meeting coming up Wednesday. Anybody that wants to get into this leadership, anybody who wants to get something started in their county, anybody who wants to become a district leader or a state coordinator or a county organizer, or anything on working to get this message down to the counties and get the people up and moving and taking control, come to our meeting on Wednesday right here in this room at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And after that, of course, we'll see you, Lord willing, on Monday, 9 p.m. next week. And that's right after Easter Sunday, and we will be reading the paper at that Monday night meeting. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.